Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, okay, is that the air date of this episode is April 18th, 2023, and tonight's subject is our current state of affairs in 2023. We'll be discussing what is most essential to our advancement and self-preservation as the people in the African diaspora: education versus miseducation, the economic impact of us as a people rejecting the misconception of critical race theory, why it is necessary for our youth to know the brutalization of white supremacy, why it is necessary for our people to know about our economic power, which is a sleeping giant to the likes of the Dunk and the Panties in Florida. Why is it necessary for us to stop hating ourselves? And also, too, flexing our economic power as the American dollar becomes shit-faced. In addition to, we're going to be speaking with, and this is going to be our top story tonight, Ralph Yarrow was shot in Kansas City by a white man for knocking on the wrong door. He was in search of his younger brother. And from what I understand, Mr. Yarrow, you know, was shot twice. First he was shot. And then, of course, the first round knocked him down. And then the fella came out there and shot him again. And he was just going there just to pick up, you know, his little brother. It is quite obvious the white dude used this as an excuse to shoot a black person. And then remember a while back that the movie actor Liam Neeson had stated a while back on social media that he had wanted to kill a black person, preferably a black male. Also, too, we're going to be crumb-bumming on this artificial intelligence, specifically Silicon Game Valley and the correlation between alphabetized agendas to effeminate black men and to obliterate the black family. And, of course, we will be discussing reparations. And then, of course, we do know that the Jaylen Walker situation there in Ohio, where a young man was shot 47 times by the police department, the jury declines to charge the cops. And also, too, we're going to be bringing in our co-executive producer, the one and only Jay Nkrumah. Hey, how you doing, Mr. Nkrumah? How's life treating you today there in the Mile High Income City?
All right, Shabaka's still getting over this pneumonia.
No, man. Okay, we'll definitely drink plenty of fluids, man, and eat a lot of hot chicken noodle soup. You know what I mean? Okay, yeah. Now, dealing with this education versus the miseducation. Okay, as we all know that we have emphasized before and on other platforms, you know, the miseducation of the Negro that Carter G. Woods and that broke back during the 1920s. And he had also brought about what they had called Negro History Week that evolved into Black History Month. But it's incredible that they would give us the coldest month of the year to celebrate Black History Month in February, which is like in the middle of the wintertime. And we are people of the sun. Yes, now, also, too, Governor DeSantis, or the Panties, as I call him, okay, what he wants to do is eliminate our history of the brutalization that was used against us ever since that we were brought here. And they pretty much, you know, want us to forget. But at the same token, they made it a point for us not to forget. See, so what we have here is hypocrisy. And also, too, it just came across my desk. As you know, Fox News just got sued for $287 billion. Actually, they need to take it off the air. They need to go throw Tucker Carlson in an insane asylum or in jail for spreading such lies. And Carlson, you're welcome to give us a call here at 516-418-5996, okay, because you will not be the first well-known personality that we had on our podcast, and you will not be the last. Okay, so moving right along here with that is that when Fox News came out here, you know, making the chairman what's his name? Rupert Cross, I believe is his name, or Murdoch, I believe is his name. Okay, Carlson should have been, Rupert Murdoch, yes, sir, I stand corrected. And so guys like Tucker Carlson, let me see, that Judge Jean Carroll they had on there, they needed to disbar her ass. Harris Faulkner, you know, she needs psychological help to sit up there and to participate in some garbage like that. You're misleading the public. Then not to mention the fact that they keep sending out all these dog whistles, you see what I mean, to do us in, okay? And then, of course, you know, they got to have some type of hidden agenda, you know, for all these murders by the police state of our people who are the majority are unarmed. And then, of course, going back to the George Floyd case with Chauvin, where he murdered that man, and me personally, I think Chauvin should have been taken off into the federal court system of where he could have been made eligible for the death penalty like they did Timothy McVeigh, who masterminded, you know, the bombing of the federal building there, you know, a while back. Okay.
Yeah,
and yes, sir, in Oklahoma City, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That bastard tried to get out. They tried to get a lower sentence, and it just came out that he's still going to have to serve 22 and a half years in state prison.
Okay, who is this?
Chauvin.
Oh, yeah, George Chauvin. Oh, yeah, most definitely. And, you know, he deserves the death penalty, you know, life without parole, because that was intentional murder of what he did, plus that Mr. Floyd was bound, plus Mr. Floyd, you know, was saying that he couldn't breathe. Now, you get these white supremacists who come up and say, well, George Floyd had a record for this. He had a record for that. Okay, but he still had what they called civil rights, and, of course, we know that they're very, very selective about who they enforce these civil rights on. Okay, so one of these black politicians or the political front altogether, both at the state's level and at the federal level, are going to take some type of affirmative action against it. But when you have guys like Herschel Walker, let's see, who was the fool there in California, who was a regent, Ward Connolly, you know, that wanted to, quote, unquote, get rid of racial quotas and all this other type of stuff. Then the Bakke decision that they said, saying, you know, it was a case of reverse discrimination. Now, when they use the term reverse discrimination, then they would have to acknowledge just off that reasoning of logic or illogic that discrimination does exist. But then they handpick these politicians to try to water down, you know, this travesty. You see what I mean? You know, like, look at Herschel Walker. I mean, look at Warlock out of Georgia, Uncle Tim Scott. You see what I mean? And really, I'm just looking at all the people, you know, who made the ultimate sacrifice in the 1960s, you know, for the right to vote. And then even though, what was his name? John Lewis, glorifying how he got bashed upside his head, you know, on a Edmund Pettus Bridge. And
yeah, they didn't make the ultimate.
Yeah, say that again.
They didn't make the ultimate sacrifice for us to have the right to vote. They made the ultimate sacrifice so we can have race and freedom. I'm so sick of hearing, our ancestors died for us to have the right to vote. No, our ancestors died for us to have the right to liberation and freedom. They thought that voting was going to be the way. Clearly see that it's not.
Exactly. You see, so this is why we had stated on other platforms as well, too, is that what it is our own economical independence. You see what I'm saying? Is to build some businesses to acquire the four factors of production, which is land, labor, capital, and risk management. Okay, but the thing is that you have to look at is that all this inclusiveness does not work. You see what I mean? It's an illusion. And this is why, you know, they want to ban certain platforms and they shadow ban us, you know, on a regular basis, you know, for speaking these truths. But, however, you know, we will take it, you know, to the people and to have them, you know, decide. But from what I understand is that Ben Crump is going to take the case, you know, for the family of Mr. Ralph Yarrow. You know, now I can appreciate what Ben Crump is doing, but at the same token, though, just want to make sure he's not ambulance chasing, you know what I'm saying? And what happened.
Chasing as usual. The family's going to get a bag. They're not going to call it what it is.
Yeah.
As the racist and white supremacy, they're going to get on that, forgive. Oh, or he didn't know what he was doing, or he made a mistake.
Right.
That crap.
Right.
It's going to go.
Yeah. And
and it's going to keep repeating until we say enough is enough of this shit.
Yeah, exactly. You see what I'm saying? And then, too, when is it someone is going to take it to the United Nations, you know, about our right to self-determination? When is someone going to take it to the United Nations that in the United States there are definitely human rights violations of what happened with Mr. Yarrow, of what happened with Mr. Ezell Ford, of what happened with Paul Child there in Denver, Colorado? What happened with Eula Love in Los Angeles? Yes, sir.
The United Nations is controlled by the United States. So it's like asking the United States to police themselves or to investigate themselves.
Well, yeah. You have a point on that. Is because they had mentioned that after World War II, when it started, the United Nations, you know, was originally in San Francisco. You see what I'm saying? But, however, you know, then it got moved to New York City. And just what are they really going to do? Okay, now, what it is that they're trying to, you know, get all the resources off the continent. It's because that there contributes, like, to about a good 85% of the world's natural resources, you know, for capitalistic production of products, weaponry, you know, things of this nature right here. And then, of course, too, of all these train derailments, they're a habit. They see, like, one in Ohio. Then they had another one in Maine, I believe. Then I remember about 15 years ago, they had a bad train derailment with toxic chemicals that plundered into Lake Shasta up in Northern California, killed all the fish, you know what I mean, contaminated the waterways, things of that nature right there. So one of these individuals are going to be held accountable. But like as you pointed out, it all boils down to greed. You see what I'm saying? Capitalistic greed. And they don't want us, you know, to have any type of innovation, you know, for ourselves, you know, and that they're sickening. You know what I'm saying? That they're sickening. And also, too, ladies and gentlemen, here at Chicago's Black Experience Enhanced, which is a division of Frontline Black News. This is episode 332 of season 7. So definitely Google our past episodes, share them. Please call in. You can inbox us on our like page of Shabaka's Black Experience and answer what are the topics that you would like to have come up. And I do see that we have a caller here, and we do recognize the caller there at 405 with the last 255. Anytime you want to speak on air, just press 1. We'll be more than happy to have you in the queue. Okay, so now the reason why it is necessary for our youth to know the brutalization of white supremacy and the history of it to our people is this. So therefore, in the future, you know, when they become elders and what have you, they can make, you know, the proper decisions. And plus that, as you have stated so many times, Brother Che, that this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And then also, too, as we know, next month is the birthday of Malcolm X coming up, and I believe this year would have been his 98th birthday. Yeah, you know, so make it a point to go out there and to recognize the brother and what have you and all that came from that and the struggle for our liberation. And then keep in mind, people, this is a day you don't ask to take off. You just simply take it off. And it will be very, very interesting, Brother Che, just to see if every black person had taken that day off and just to see what the stock market would do and how goods and services will be affected about, you know, about America's gross national production, you know, just for that day. That there would be a very, very interesting experiment. And then also, too, as we discovered on Black Power, not discovered, but discussed on Black Power Radio yesterday, and a shout-out there to them brothers there, Double R, Sheik Imam, you know what I'm saying? Of course, our man Dynamite, you know what I mean? And they were talking about in regard about the Federal Reserve Bank, of how they had stole money from the Freedmen's Bureau, you know, after slavery, and then called it the Federal Reserve Bank. You see what I mean? So once again, you know, that they stole our money. Uh-oh, guess who we got, folks? You want to unmute his mic, man? We already know who that is, man. We already know. Let's hear what old Sarge got to say. All right, Sarge, what's going on with you, man? We know it's you. What's happening?
Man, it is so serendipitous to hear you mention Malcolm X, because I just got through watching a two-hour documentary today on the Smithsonian Channel, and it was entitled Cassius X Becoming Ali. And it goes into great detail about Muhammad Ali's relationship with Malcolm X. I mean, great detail.
Right.
His relationship with Malcolm X,
right,
how it was broken up by his decision to pledge his allegiance to Elijah Muhammad when Malcolm broke from the Nation, and how much he regretted it. I mean, it was really an interesting documentary. It goes through the whole thing of how he became, how he got into the Nation and what his thought processes were up leading up to it. And everything had Betty Shabazz, what's her name? Malcolm's younger daughter. It speaks of her relationship with him and everything else. If you get a chance to catch it, I highly recommend that you do.
Okay, Sarge, I'm going to tell you something. Okay, I lived through that era. I saw Malcolm speak when I was 2 years old, although I did not know who he was at that time. Okay, you and I, well, you're a little bit older than I, Sarge. Okay, I remember when Ali was going out there doing his thing as well, you know. And, and also, too, we got the Anchorman with us. Okay, yeah, we got to bring the Anchorman in here. Okay. Hey, evening to you, the Anchorman.
Peace.
Yeah,
Science, what's going on with y'all?
Okay, all right. So the subject tonight is our current state of affairs in 2023. We're discussing what is the most essential for our advancement and preservation as a people in the African diaspora. We're dealing with education, miseducation, the economic impact of us as a people rejecting the misconceptions of critical race theory brought by the Apaches down in Florida. Why is it necessary for our youth to know the brutalization of white supremacy? Why is it necessary for our people to know more about our economic power, which is a sleeping giant to the likes of the dump and of Florida? Why is it necessary for us to stop hating ourselves and also to flex our economic power as the American dollar, you know, goes down the toilet, you know what I mean? And then also, too, we're speaking of the latest issue of what happened in Kansas City, where Mr. Ralph Yarl was shot twice in Kansas City, one round in the head by a white man, for him knocking on the wrong door because he was going into the neighborhood, you know, to go pick up his little brothers right there and what happened. So, of course, you know, if that is that there's, you know, white supremacy, you know, to the utmost, you know, and once again, you know, they want to go back, you know, where they could go with casual killings of us. And then also, too, we got the one only Sarge with us, Anchorman. And then, too,
Hell yeah.
Okay.
That brother knows his stuff.
Liam Neeson. Yeah, oh yeah, Usaj, he's been through it, you know. And Liam Neeson stated a while back that on social media that he had wanted to kill a black person, preferably a black male. You see what I mean? So you see what's going on here. And also, too, Anchorman,
yes, sir,
we're going to be crumb-bumming on Stinky Bird. I no longer call him Tweety Bird. I call him Stinky Bird because when you have a musk, that means that you're funky, you're nasty, didn't wash your feet, didn't wash your behind, didn't brush your teeth. So that's Stinky Bird that we're talking
filthy
about.
Filthy in all
now,
their affairs.
Right, yes, sir. You know what I'm saying? And then also, too, and then about this alphabetized agenda, as you know what it is, to feminize black men and to eliminate the black family unit. And then, of course, reparations. And then, of course, as we know, the case in Ohio earlier today with Jaylen Walker, you know, who was shot allegedly, from what I understand, about 63 times by the police. The jury declines to charge the cop, you know, with these murders. You see what I'm saying? And that's all what it is murder, man, because come on, man. Anytime that you're going to go up there and shoot a guy, man, you know, 25 times, 47 times, that's murder. Now, what do you got to say about that, Sarge? Now, I just want to get your opinion on that, Sarge.
Look, I'm a big I remember I was a police firearms instructor. I was a use of force instructor,
okay,
defensive tactics. So this is my bailiwick right here. And I believe fire discipline above, well, not over above everything, but fire discipline is imperative. Now, the question, though, legally is, was one shot justified? Now, if you're gonna tell me the 63 shots excessive, even I gotta say, yeah, I think so. But the question is not whether it was 63 or not legally. Was one shot justified? Because the first shot could have killed him or might have been fatal.
Right.
The question is, was one shot justified? Not 64. And if one shot was justified, then legally 64 is.
Okay, Sarge, that's overkill, man. I mean, come on. These guys are using 9 millimeters,
man. Not if the first shot was fatal or killed him. You're just shooting bullets in a court.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but what I'm just saying, though, is this here.
But it doesn't look good. I'm not going to. Does it look good? Hell no. It looks like bad fire discipline from the police. So that's really the issue for me.
Okay.
That, you know, I mean, it doesn't look good. I mean, you're supposed to be judicious with your shots if you have to shoot.
Right. Okay. Now, I could see, man, if they took their batons out and just whooped his ass, man. But to dump on him, man, 65 times? Come on. Sorry.
They're supposed to serve and protect, not kill at will. They're supposed to serve and protect, not kill at will.
Exactly. There you go, Anchorman. Tell him, Anchorman. Tell him. Now, you're
serve and
protect,
not kill at will.
No, I mean, look, again, I cannot argue with the amount of rounds they put on that dude. Now, I'm not even going to try. But I'd like to remind you, the question is whether one shot was justified, not 63. And that's what the main question is going to be asking at the inquest, or whether when the grand jury did decline to indict those police officers.
Right. Okay. And then, of course, as you do know, Sarge, with Jaylen, with Mr. Jaylen Walker there in the state of Ohio, they refused to charge the police officers, you know, in murdering Mr. Walker as well, too, okay? Just like what happened in 1992 in Los Angeles, Sarge, okay? Just like what happened with George Floyd in Minneapolis, just like what happened with Paul Childs in Denver, Colorado, just like what happened with Hula Love in Los Angeles, just like what happened with Mario Woods in San Francisco, just like what happened with Mr. Earl Garner there when he was strangled to death about the loose cigarettes and what have you. And it keeps going on and on. Look what they did to Sandra Bland. I mean, look what they did to Breonna Taylor. Okay? You know, Breonna Taylor, they shoot the woman in her bed is because her man is in the house, you know what I'm saying? The dog gets kicked in, so he's doing anything what a man's supposed to do. He grabbed his weapon and he's out there and started dumping on her asses, okay? You see what I'm saying? Well, I mean,
that's
what's the black man supposed to do when his woman's home?
He didn't identify himself.
You know
man.
What I'm saying? Yeah, exactly. Well, it was a no-knock warrant. It was a no-knock warrant, Sarge. Now, let me ask you this here, Sarge. Now, what is your opinion on a no-knock warrant? And I meant to ask you
all
that.
All right, now, you know, Brother Shabaga, you've been a little bit loose with the facts about Breonna Taylor. Now, I'm telling you that right now. You have been. Many things you said aren't true. Yes, they did obtain a no-knock warrant. But the subsequent investigation pretty much revealed beyond dispute, even though they had a no-knock warrant, they knocked first and announced their presence. That was well established.
Okay.
They did have a no-knock warrant, but they didn't exercise it as a no-knock warrant.
Okay. Now, Sarge, you are aware of the fact is that the address on that warrant was at the residence that was clear across town from Ms. Taylor's residence. You're aware of that fact, are you not?
I'm aware of the entire investigation, including all of the affidavits, reports leading up to the raid, in which they detailed their observations on the house where Breonna Taylor lived and several other residences with extensive photographs and logs kept of their observations of the cars coming and going, the license plates, and the personnel involved.
I got a question.
Oh, yes, sir. Go ahead, Anchorman.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Sarge, check this out. Now, is it safe to say that they're looking for an excuse to kill black people, and it's basically open season on black people in general when it comes to, you know, white people? Because, you know, look how they did the individual who went in that driveway. He just started dumping. He was looking for an excuse to dump on them. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's like they're looking for an excuse to kill a black person nowadays. Is it
that's
safe to say
point.
That, Sarge?
Well, see, now,
go ahead.
I know, look, this is always a problem when you make these blanket statements like that, because in every single case you mentioned a moment ago, you ran down an extensive list. In every single case you mentioned, there were a bunch of facts there that made each one unique. Yeah, they follow a general pattern, but each one is unique. And it's not like you can neglect those things when you are deciding whether or not it's open season on black people or not.
Well, I'm saying,
is
it safe to say, Sarge, that the white agenda is bent on killing black people, period, the white agenda? Let's not say all white people, because there are some good white people in the world, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, the white agenda specifically. Is it safe to say that
here is the police, all right? Let's deal with that. Let's kind of narrow it down a bit, because most white people kill anybody, any white or black, in their lives. We're talking about the police, who tend to have a tendency to do it more often than most other sectors of society. And here's where I'm going to absolutely agree with you. The police must be held to the strictest of accountability when they kill any citizen for any reason. That's any citizen for any reason. They have to be able to completely justify it and explain why it was necessary under both the law and under police policy. So we don't have an argument there. Now, the disagreement is about whether or not it was justified when they do it.
So,
yeah, I agree with you. Now, the police, you got to hold them absolutely accountable every single time they kill somebody, every single time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now,
let me ask you this,
I have a problem with a thorough investigation into what they say was the reason, what the law is, and what the facts and the evidence show. I got no problem with that. I welcome it, in fact, because one thing I've noticed about these body-worn cameras, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, they justify the police officer's actions.
Right. Okay, because, see, they got too much camaraderie, Sarge. Okay, straight out. They got too much camaraderie. Now, Christopher Dorner brought that out there in Los Angeles, where he had witnessed police misconduct, where a female LAPD sergeant was beating a homeless man who was handcuffed. Okay, this person is bound. Okay, so Mr. Dorner, he went on there and reported it, and then a police captain who was representing him in his union, has fabricated evidence against Mr. Dorner. And then Mr. Dorner was a former Navy SEAL, and he was a lieutenant at that, meaning an officer and a Navy SEAL. And he had special weapons and tactical skills. And SARS, he scared the crap out of the LAPD. And he said it in his manifesto that he wrote up on Facebook that Zuckerberg tore down, is that he knew that he was doomed, man, because, you know, he followed protocol. He was an honest guy. The dude was only 33 years of age. Now, what do you got to say about that,
Sarge? Well, actually, let's get something straight about Christopher Dorner. Christopher Dorner was a Naval Reserve Lieutenant Senior Grade, meaning he was an 03, which is like the equivalent of a captain in the Army. He was Lieutenant Senior Grade. That, like I said, that's an 03 pay rank captain. He wasn't a Navy SEAL. He was a member of a Navy security unit. He did have extensive training, however, because they're very well trained in base security and security operations, and he had infinitely more training, probably than your average police officer, as well as his police training. So he was highly trained individual, no doubt about that, but he wasn't a Navy SEAL.
Okay. Now, according to Mr. Dorner's manifesto, that he had stated, and I'm going from memory now, and if Brother Che, if you could pull it up, man, you know, that is if they didn't ban it yet, is that he was called the NGR term, you know, by some of his LAPD co-workers. He had also had stated that a couple of them that he had smashed for using such words against him as well, too. And keep in mind, Christopher Dorner was a big dude, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, he really was. You know, Dorner was a big dude.
He played football in college. I think he was a lineman or a linebacker.
Yeah. As big as he was, I think this dude was more so of a lineman, Sarge, because, you know, your average linebacker, man, is like about 6'4", 6'5". Dorner was every bit, man, like of about 6'7", 6'8". He was a big dude.
He looked the part. He was definitely big guy.
Yeah, and he said in his manifesto that the only thing that he had was to protect his name, and that's why he went out the way he did. Now, just to go to show you how cowardly that the LAPD is that you had two officers, I believe, I think it was either Rampart Division or Northeast Division. I forgot which. But they were so scared, they saw a vehicle fitting the description of Dorner's vehicle, and where they just came out there and shot out the back window and put it like about 25 bullets in a car. Fortunately, this woman and her daughter. Yeah. Okay, hold it. Now, here's the kicker. Okay, and then fortunately, the woman and her daughter who was delivering the Los Angeles Times, were not injured. You see what I'm saying? And we did have a caller out of the 720 with the last 40703. Please call back in, you know what I'm saying? And just press 1. We'll be happy to have you on the air. And we do have a caller here out of 405, last 255. Anytime you want to comment, please, you know, just press 1. Okay. So these dudes were scared. And do you know what the district attorney said about those guys shooting up that woman's car delivering the newspaper?
Yeah.
The DA said he ain't filing no charges because that they were just too stupid. He's not filing no charges.
I'd agree with that. I would maybe slap a reckless endangerment charge on them, maybe. But, yeah, they were definitely stupid.
Sarge, what should have happened to them is that they should have been arrested, placed in handcuffs, processed right down there, man, in whatever division they was, and take straight over there to Boucher Street, man, which is the L.A. County Jail, Twin Towers. That's what they belonged at, okay? See, this is the problem, Sarge, is that you cannot have these loose cannons being public safety officers doing what they want without any impunity, man, just like the slave patrollers. You see what I'm saying? This is why the term race soldier is used. You see what I mean? You know, and every time that I'm up here driving and when I see one of these police units, man, the thing that goes through my mind, okay, is this fool going to pull me over with no probable cause? just because he just wants to kill a black person.
Come on, son.
All right, so what do you think about his manifesto and the fact he decided to go out and murder the daughter of the LAPD captain who represented him at his dismissal hearing and her fiance?
Ah. That's a good point. You know, Sarge, that's a good point. It's because, as he said in his manifesto, is that the LAPD police captain who worked against him, who was supposed to be representing him at the Board of Rights hearing, he knew that he was lying, and he went on and says, well, check this out, Captain, since you're going to sit up there and betray me, man, check this out. I got a gift for you. And then, unfortunately, you know, the young woman was killed. But
I'm sure you're not rationalizing that or justifying it, are you?
No, Sarge, what I'm doing is just proving a point that you can only kick a dog so many times, man, before it decides to fight back, okay? Because, see, Donna had special skills. Now, also, too, Donna had said, police captain, I'm going after you. I just killed your daughter, which he had stated in his manifesto. He also had stated that there was two other racist white officers that he got into it with in the Harbor Division of the LAPD. He said he's gunning for them, too. And he also says, hey, guess what? Before I go out, I'm going after the cream de la cream. I'm going to knock off the chief of the LAPD. This is what he said in his manifesto. And why this young man went up there and said this is because he said that the only thing that he has is his name. Okay? And he apologized to the people that he had disagreements with. He had also had apologized, you know, to loved ones that he had disagreements with. But he did not apologize for them bastards that he saw violating the law that they swore to uphold and protect. I can't hear you, Sarge. What's up with that?
Well, I'm not denying the man may have had grievances, although, as you know, the investigation failed to uphold his claim that that female sergeant kicked that suspect in the face. Now, again,
Sarge,
that was the result of the investigation.
Sarge.
And
okay, Sarge.
I think we can agree. I think we have agreed that his response, no matter what the truth of the matter is, was completely inappropriate and wrong.
Uh-huh. Okay, but here's the point right here. You can only kick a dog so many times, okay? It was clearly evident that he had pointed out, and the captain backed the sergeant, who was a white female, that handcuffed a homeless black man, who was an elderly black man at that, and started beating him and kicking him, okay? So then when he went through the protocol with his Board of Rights hearings, okay, they betrayed him. And then he says, well, police chief, you behind this here, too. You're supposed to be the police chief. So guess what, man? You're my ultimate target. Dorna knew he was a dead man. What Dorna did is what Huey Newton had described as revolutionary suicide, you see? And then Dorna had also had mentioned a couple of them white dudes that he had to smash, man, for disrespecting him using that NGR account. You see what I mean? So, I mean, what happened in that case right there is, it bred its own counteraction of its evil because the Los Angeles Police Department, in my opinion, is a terrorist organization. Okay? Let's look at your boy Mark Furman. Hold it. Let's look at Mark Furman, Sarge. You remember the O.J. Simpson case, and then I got this book here by Larry Elder, and Elder, you and Terrell are welcome to call up because I don't respect neither one of you as men. I think both of y'all should be wearing panties with the governor of Florida. So I'm just making that there. No. Okay. But what it is, though, Sarge, where do you draw the line? You can only kick a dog so many times.
Well, look, I think the LAPD has got a lot of problems, believe me. LAPD,
it should be disbanded. It should be defunded. They need to be shut down out of business.
Well,
that
wouldn't help Los Angeles any. That wouldn't help Los Angeles any. I think that cure might be worse than the disease. No, I think that cure might be worse than the disease.
It's a disease, Sarge.
I think that cure would be far worse. If you want to put L.A. in a receivership, and put the LAPD under consent decree, okay. But to defund the LAPD,
Sean,
when crime is skyrocketing the way it is, no. No.
Sean,
be.
Okay, sorry.
Especially
in
homicide,
California,
and the people getting killed are people of color.
Okay.
They're scared.
Okay. Sarge, you don't have to tell me. I grew up in Los Angeles, okay? I know what it's like to have a lap dog come up there and put a 9mm to the back of my head and say, hey, man, you move 1 inch, I will blow your ass from here to Imperial Highway. Do you know how far Hollywood Boulevard is from Imperial Highway in Los Angeles, Sarge?
It's quite a way from what I understand.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely quite a way, man. You're talking about every bit, man, of about 7 or 8 miles. You see what I'm saying? Without a doubt. You see? But the cold part about it is, Sarge, just like Brother Che was saying in his campaign for mayor, is defund the police, okay? And then what you would have to do is
can I ask a question?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Anchorman.
Okay, General. I want to make clear. In no way am I saying that the police are doing a good job or nothing, but there's a system
right.
that's in place. I'm just wondering what system would replace that, the system that's in place now, if we were to defund the police. I'm just saying,
okay.
How would we go about
yeah.
handling things, you know, in a systematic,
okay.
orderly way?
Okay. Well, first place, Anchorman, that's a very good question that you brought, okay, because see, what they have done in the last 25 years is that they have militarized the police. Now, the police is supposed to be a civilian agency, not a military agency. And when you look at, like, ever since the days they had the Bataram there in Los Angeles, the way they got these cars souped up, the way these officers are coming out here with 3 and 4 guns on a man and 9mm and with 1 up and 15 down, you see what I mean? See, that's militarization. You see, there was a place in history, okay, that a sister had brought up, you know, on our podcast, and hopefully she'll call in because I did mentioned our tonight show to her. There was a place where they disarmed the people, okay, and they armed the military. And this place was called Nazi Germany, okay?
You're
just
right,
like
General.
The same crap.
Right.
Yeah, yes, sir. Okay, just like with the same crap of what the Boers did down there in Azania. I refuse to call it South Africa because the true name of it is Azania. Why do you think that we have Sister Miriam Makeba do our introduction all the time? They called her Mama Africa. It's because, you know, she was against the apartheid situation. You know, they had exiled her from Azania. You see what I'm saying? Very, very powerful, popular sister, just like her and Nina Simone. Okay, and I know you know who Nina Simone is, Sarge. Okay, you know, because she had came out there and spoke some truths, too, in her contemporary times of the 1960s. You know, of a
yeah.
place called Mississippi. Okay.
Yeah.
And y'all saw the movie Mississippi Burning. Mississippi is where Emmett Till was killed. You see what I'm saying? Where he was
sure.
brutalized, murdered, tortured, and what happened. You see what I'm saying? And this is supposed to be the great United States of America? Come on now. Now, what do you got to say on that there, Sarge, and we're going to the anchor man?
Well, look. Again, I'm not going to be one to necessarily defend the LAPD because there's a lot of funkiness about the LAPD. Ramparts was one of the most disgraceful
oh, yeah.
police scandals in the history of the United States.
Uh-huh.
Ramparts absolutely uh-huh. out of control. Uh-huh. I don't think LAPD ever uh-huh. fully accounted for what happened with the Ramparts division. So I get your point. I do.
Glad you brought that
okay.
up. Hold on, Sarge. Glad you brought that up about the Rampart scandal. If anybody ever saw the motion picture with Sean Penn and Robert Duvall called Colors, Sean Penn and Robert Duvall were crash officers, community resources against street hoodlums, and I know it very well because in my youth I've been jacked up by them many a times, okay? And Sean Penn played the typical LAPD crash officer all the way down to the point where he had handcuffed that man and hit him over there in front of the Nickerson Gardens, which is a housing project out there. Okay. So Bernard Parks, who is the chief after Willie Williams, he shut down crash, okay? And Bernard Parks, I believe he came up through the ranks of the LAPD, and he has shut down crash is because of crash's brutalization, you know, to the community. Now, here's one for you, Sarge. You're going to love this one. One day on my way to work in downtown Los Angeles on the corner of 7th Street and Central Avenue, which is in the heart of L.A.'s wholesale produce district, right, there was a gentleman who was drunk. I mean, you staggering drunk. He's crossing across the street. Crash rolls up. They tell him, get his ass about the street. Okay, now this dude who was drunk made a mistake, and he tells the LAPD two words. One starts with the letter F, and the other one starts with the letter Y. Why did he do that? So they just casually pulled over, got out of their cars. The officer pulled his 9mm on him, told him to put his hands up. The cop goes up there, kicks him in the ball, leaves him out there in the middle of the intersection, and they get in their car and drive off. That wasn't police charge. That was terrorism.
Right.
No, yeah, no,
Sarge, I can't hear you.
That was a crime,
yeah,
man.
Hold on, Sarge. Let the anchor man go, then you go, Sarge. And also, too,
okay,
we got another caller here with the last 255 out of the 405 area code. Just press one if you want to speak live on air. Go ahead, anchor man.
Okay, this is what I want to say. I have a friend that's a 5%er, and his name is Scientific Bashim. That's what we're going to call him on this air. And he's a peace officer. And then one of the most righteous brothers I know in life. You know, and just like the Sarge, you know what I'm saying? You are a decorated police officer too, right, Sarge?
I am rather proud of my service for over two decades. Yes.
Okay. All I'm saying is that, man, there are some police out there that are just doing their job and that really mean well, you know. But I mean, the bad obviously outweigh the good on this subject. And what I think is that, you know, I think that police need to be screened and evaluated yearly, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know what the protocol and procedures are, but, man, they need to do some psychological checks on these people, man, you know, because a lot of them aren't fit for duty, man, you know? And I just think they need to put the microscope on them a little bit better, you know what I mean, where, they really get in their head. They need to put psychiatrists and psychologists, you know, really to evaluate these people more often, because a lot of these people, man, they're just causing chaos instead of enforcing or trying to help help order in the street, you know what I mean, or to maintain order in the street. And I just – that's my take mm-hmm. on it, General, my bad. But, Sarge, I just want to thank you for serving your country, man, and thank you for being a good police officer, because it sounds like you're a solid dude, man. So I'm not going to say that all police are bad, because that's not real, you know what I'm saying? But the bad right now, it looks like from the outside looking in, it seems that the bad are outweighing and outnumbering the good. That's what I want to say.
Well, I appreciate what you said, because I did strive to do my duty with as much integrity. I'm not saying I was perfect, because I wasn't. But I did strive to do my duty with integrity. And here's where you can tell the police officer is going to get in a lot of trouble. When they say they are the police. When you hear a police officer say that, you know that guy might be bound for trouble. You're not the police. You're a police officer vested with authority for a limited amount of time while you have the badge on active duty to do the job the people have put you in place to do. And you get to thinking, you get badge heavy. You get to thinking you are, in fact, the law. That's where a lot of this shit gets started. So, you know, I mean, you've got to keep things in perspective. You don't have a lot of power. You got a lot of authority. You got the authority to make arrests. You got the authority to serve warrants. You got the authority to do investigations. You got the authority to carry a gun and wear a badge. But that's it. You can't get badge heavy. And to my credit, I'm going to compliment myself. I never did. I kept everything in perspective.
Okay, now let me ask you this here, Sarge. How many suspects did you brutalize?
Huh?
Have you brutalized any suspects that you have taken into custody?
All right, I'm gonna tell you. This is the closest I came to brutalizing a suspect. Okay, this is a confession. All right.
Okay.
This is the closest I came. All right. I had staked out a place we're looking for burglary suspect, and I had staked it out.
Okay.
And we caught him. I busted him. And while I was processing him, I laid my jacket on the desk to go into the cabinet to get some other paperwork I had to do to finish processing the guy. He was the only guy in the room at the time. My partner had left. And he was able to reach my jacket where my keys had fallen out. My handcuff key was on it.
Yeah.
He was able to free himself and get out the window. I spent the next 9 hours looking for this guy because I knew where his hangouts were. I was not going to quit until I got his ass back. And I got him.
Okay.
And then I got him back. Okay. I'm so mad I done missed out on some things I intended to do. And I'm pissed off at this guy for escaping custody. And I grabbed him by his lapels. And I was working out, and I was strong as shit, you hear me? Picked him by the belt, and I picked him up overhead and slammed against the wall. And then I caught myself, and I let him back down. That was the closest I ever came to brutalizing anybody. I really didn't do anything to him. I just had a flash of anger. That was it. I never did anything worse than that.
Okay, now let me ask you this here, Sarge. Now, Daryl Gates described in his book called Cheat, okay? And I hated Daryl Gates so bad, you know, go piss on his grave, but I read his book, you know, The Cold Patent. I read your book. Gates gets up here and states that in the Eula Love case, and where they put over 27 bullets in this woman, is that the police exhibited what they called rapid fire syndrome. Now, keep in mind that Eula Love only had a knife, okay, because the police was summoned because the gas man of Southern California Gas was coming out there to shut off her gas. And believe it or not, L.A. had a very cold winter that year. I think that they went down to 39 degrees, which is unusual for Los Angeles in the winter month. And the gas man comes out there and says, I'm shutting off your gas. And she says, no, you can't because I have children in here. And if the gas goes off, I cannot cook for my children. I cannot have hot showers and bathing for the children. And she would have been, what she was correct about, would have been hit with parental neglect under California law. So therefore, the gas man, then they ignored it. So she bopped him upside his head with a shovel. Okay, so the two lap dogs go out there. And this is what Daryl Gates says in his book, and may he rest in peace, okay, because I think he was a lousy police officer. I think he was an racist, okay? And I think he had an uncontrollable hatred of black people. So he says, well, this is rapid fire syndrome. You know, we asked the cops how many times did they fire. One said 3 times, the other one said 2. And then when he checked the clips on them, you know, which is 15 rounds, per clip, one up in the chamber, so that's a total of 32 rounds right there that would discharge. Okay, that's overkill, man. You know, that's overkill. This is a woman.
You do understand that I was a firearms instructor, and I made extensive studies of when I was doing, when I had to do the training for my students.
Yeah.
Remember, every lesson plan I did, I had to submit to the Attorney General's office for approval to make sure it was legally correct.
Uh-huh.
Every single one.
Okay.
And I did extensive research into gunfights. In particular, one of my greatest training aides was the New York Police Department's Firearms Training Unit, because they have one of the best databases available in the United States on the dynamics of police gunfight. I mean, it is superb. It's extensively researched. And one of the things that I became aware of in all the research I did about police gunfights as I was instructing my students was certain phenomenon known as auditory exclusion, tachypsychia, time compression, and any number of factors that affect a shooter in a violent situation where they or other people they are protecting's lives are in danger. And believe me, it may not seem credible to you sitting here listening to it in the safe comfort of your living room, But when it is going down, all of your perceptions are distorted, including how many times you may have fired, how many rounds went off. It is not a one. I have seen it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, reported in police shootings. The database is undeniable and extensive. So it is entirely credible to me how it could have happened.
I was going to ask the Sarge. Sarge, is it safe to say that the United States government basically is the cause of crime in the United States of America? Just because, you know, like I always say on this show, they're the ones who taught the people in South America how to manufacture drugs. They brought the drugs over here. They gave us the guns. And at the same time, they passed all these bills for more prisons. They got us fighting one against another. They basically helped us commit crimes, you know, and then they put us in prison, and then they make it where we can't even make a living for ourselves, where we have to resort to crime. So at the end of the day, it's kind of like, you know, they're the cause of it, you know, but they're reaping the rewards of it by monopolizing the prison industrial industry, and also, you know, by gaining money off the judicial system, you know, because, you know, people go in front of the judge and then the judge gets paid. And then, you know, I'm just saying, is it safe to say that the United States government is the cause of the same crime that they're supposedly protecting us from?
You got a lot of moving parts there, brother. Let me try to just take a few of them down here for a minute. Well, first of all, sure Brother Shabaka would agree with me on, this is something on which we are complete concurrence. Every law-abiding American citizen has the right to keep and bear arms. And it is an inalienable right to have by virtue of being a citizen. So every citizen who is law-abiding has the right to purchase and own as many firearms as they can afford. So that's a given. So we do accept the fact. I'm sure we don't want black people to be excluded from this right, do we? I don't think so.
No.
I think we got to set that one aside. Now, as to the issue of
the
importation of drugs
the crime problem
into the United States at the behest of or the United States turning a blind eye to it, I think that's up for debate. Because we had extensive studies on that done with the Gary Webb series, you know, A Dark Alliance. I'm sure you all are familiar with that. He wrote that series about the CIA and the Contras and funding the Nicaraguan Contras and against Nicaragua. And the whole crack cocaine epidemic and all of that. And yes, there were individuals who were involved in it. Like any other corruption involving government, but as to the United States being actively government, at the highest levels of government being involved in it, there is scant evidence for that.
And you know who the president of the United States was at the time
Donald
that we made
Wilson
this confession,
Reagan.
Right? And
yes,
you also
Donald
do
Wilson.
Know that when Maxine Waters had and Julian Dixon had opened up an investigation on it because Brother Che, he did extensive research on it. Okay. But that investigation got stalled, watered, and shut down. And, of course, we all know who shut it down. One and only Attorney General at that time, Janet Reno, who was the President of the United States at the time, old Slick Willie Bill Clinton.
Slick Willie.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you come to these repubs and these Democrats, man, to quote Brother Che, man, they two sides of the same coin, man, because don't nobody care about black folks in the United States. This is why we got to care about ourselves, because we are all
Word
we
is
got. This is why we created the hashtag Resurrection of the Mental Dead. You see, definitely check out Frontline Black News.
Look, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I saw what the FBI and the CIA did with regard to Donald Trump and the Russia collusion and the Steele dossier and the fake FISA warrants and all that. So I'm not going to say that the United States government could not have done it. I'm not going to say that. What I am going to say is, in the case of the crack cocaine epidemic, and the CIA deliberately putting crack cocaine in the black community at the highest levels of the CIA and the government, there's scant evidence for it. I've got an open mind, though. Show me some convincing evidence, and I will change my mind based on what I already know the United States government is capable of.
Right. Okay. You see what I'm saying?
I got another question for him, General, if I could and if you would.
Go ahead, Anchorman.
Okay. Now, I don't know the exact amount, but I'm going to put an approximation on it. And the United States government spends, I think, about $400 trillion, $500 trillion, some to that effect, in money in regards to giving for the military, right? So
the United States hasn't spent $400 trillion in its entire history. I mean, I think you mean billion.
No.
$800 billion a year.
I stand corrected. Thank you, Sarge. But so it's $400 billion, correct, or 300 something?
About $800 billion a year now.
Okay, $800 billion. Okay. But you know, I've been told and from some research that I did that it only takes like $1 billion or something to that effect, or a couple billion to eliminate world hunger. So I'm just wondering, you know, what's the mentality of the government if they can eliminate world hunger and all this, and they're spending more money on military projects and stuff like that instead of, you know, eliminating world hunger or even eliminating homelessness in the United States of America. Let's talk about, you know, here in America, right? They can eliminate homelessness. They can eliminate, people starving and all that, you know what I'm saying, and having to resort to crime. Why don't they do that, Sarge? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I'm going to answer your question as best I can here. Look, there's an awful lot of corruption and waste in the defense budget. There's no doubt about it. You could slash the defense budget by a couple $100 billion, and it would not affect combat efficiency or military readiness in the least. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But out of all the sectors of the federal government, I wouldn't – the defense budget, because that's the most important single expenditure the United States government makes. Everything else is either no more important or less important than what this country spends on defense, and that goes for any nation. So I wouldn't start there, especially when you consider that the defense budget is not even one-third of the federal budget overall. I wouldn't start there.
Okay, now let me ask you this.
Okay, well, where will we start?
Okay,
well,
now let me ask you this.
Okay,
go ahead.
Excuse me. Go ahead. Sarge, where would we start then? If you're saying that's not where we should start, where should we start as a country?
Okay, well, look,
to eliminate
most of
all
the
those
federal
problems.
Expenditure, 66% of the federal budget is entitlement spending, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. It's not in the defense establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And we know the kind of corruption that went on in the COVID handout monies, the corruption and the waste was legion. It was in the tens of billions of dollars. I would start there, not with the defense budget. Because, again, that's the most important single expenditure, because you do not have any country without an armed force that's capable of defending it. That doesn't mean there ain't a lot of waste to cut, and it should be cut. Now, I'm not going to start with the defense budget.
Now, riddle me this. Okay, and I think you and I discussed this here too, Anchorman, is that I saw some videos on TikTok, okay? Now, of course, you always have to consider the source, right? But I saw in China, they were showing in China, of how elementary school children were sitting at their desk, breaking down 9mm, you know, pulling out the bullets, breaking down the clips, breaking down the weapon itself and reassembling it, man, and they were doing this in less than 60 seconds. Right. Now, how come the U.S. government ain't saying nothing about that? But however, though, but if the black community teaches children that, man, you're going to have the FBI kicking in your door. But the Second Amendment, you know what I'm saying, is an inalienable right, you see. But
well,
then keep in mind, you get a lot of these
Chewbacca,
people.
The Chicago high school system taught me how to disassemble an M1 rifle, a Browning automatic rifle mm-hmm. and an M1 carbine within 60 seconds, too, blindfolded. I took junior mm-hmm. high school ROTC in high school. We had an armory mm-hmm. in Chicago Vacation High School of 45 M1 rifles, 3 Browning automatic mm-hmm. rifles, 4 M1 carbines, 2 45 caliber pistols, and 2 M3 submachine guns. Right there in the high school armory.
How old were you then, if you want me to ask?
I started in junior ROTC when I was 16. And almost every high school, including the ones in the black community, had similar armories mm-hmm. in the basement of almost every high school.
Okay, well, now they ain't teaching that. They're teaching boys how to wear dresses.
Now, they don't do it no more. Oh, that's over.
That's what they're teaching. They're teaching boys how to wear dresses.
But I'm saying
they're teaching boys how to wear dresses right now, Sarge.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you on that there, Anchorman. Now is that they, you know, want us, our young men to go up here and wear a dress and be effeminate. You see, I'm sure I'm glad, man, I'm not in my 20s or a teenager in these contemporary times, man, because, you know, that is just straight garbage right there.
I know, man, I'm telling you, even in the most hardcore inner city high schools in Chicago, like Lindbloom and Englewood, they had ROTC armories with these military-grade weapons right there in the high school.
Right.
And then nothing ever happened with them.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that tell you about then and now? What does that tell you about then and now?
Okay. Okay.
What damage do you do with a Browning automatic rifle? Think about it, Shabaka. What kind of damage do you think with a PAR firing 30-06 ammo with 550 rounds a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to say something real quick, General. I want to say something. Was that a question, Sarge? Because I don't want to overstep. Was that a question? Or that was just a statement, Sarge?
Why didn't anything happen with those firearms back then? Everybody knew how to arm them. Everybody knew how to make them operative because they did keep the firearms.
Because they were trying to strengthen the populace instead of weaken the firing pins
for these weapons and install them if we had to. But nothing ever happened.
At that time, they were trying to make the people strong, and nowadays they're trying to make the people weak. And I have something to say. I know that we hate the dump or the Trump or whatever you want to call him, but he did something as soon as he got into office that I respect like a mug. And that's he eliminated the ability for transgenders to get in the military and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? That was one of his first acts.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? That's a man that refused to be a woman.
He eliminated the ability for transgenders
to get in the military, and he was kicking them out of the military. Yeah.
Right, and then also, too, let's look at it, too, as well, too, is that you had some of these transgender guys, you know, compete in women's boxing, all right? And then there was a couple of cases where a young woman had suffered a skull fracture.
Yeah, I know I sound crazy when I say that.
Go ahead, sir.
I just have one thing to say. I know that we all hate Trump and all this crazy stuff, right? You know, and what most people are against Trump. But, yo, he does stuff like that, and he's effective in office. I just want to say that because that's one of the first power moves he made when he got into office. And I want him to do that again. I want him to eliminate all this crazy stuff that's going on. You know what I'm saying? Because I think he'll do it. You know what I mean? That's one thing I like about him being in office. Not that I like him as an individual. Because I don't. But I'm saying he's effective and he does certain things to that level that I'm in favor of. I just want to say that.
Hold on, Sarge.
I had to mute you for a minute because I'm a firm believer of our self-determination. Okay, Sarge. Go ahead and continue. I just had to get that point out there. Yeah, okay, Sarge. Sarge, you're back in, Sarge. I just had to make that point. Point taken.
But look, here's the problem with this whole thing with transgenders in sports. Why did we have women's sports in the first place? Now, there's a reason why we have women in the first place. Because women have the need to aspire to the possibility of being champions in their chosen sporting endeavor someday. Because we are unable to publicly acknowledge a fundamental truth that competitive male athletes are not just different than women. They are infinitely superior. And because these days, with diversity, equity, and inclusion, you're not allowed to voice truths about people being superior to others. You know, and women can do everything just as well or better than a man. And when it comes to competitive athletics, that is simply not true if it involves speed, strength, and power. So since we cannot acknowledge this simple truth, that makes it that much more difficult to get transgender men out of women's sports, because you'd have to say the reason for it is that men have this even mediocre male competitive athletes have a vast superiority over any woman athlete that is competitive.
Okay.
We
now,
can't acknowledge the truth.
Okay, hold on. Now, okay, hold on. Glad you brought that point up, Sarge. Glad you brought it up. Okay, now, when it comes to the combative sports, okay, like boxing,
any sport
martial arts,
generally
martial arts, you know, that can go either way depending on the
no,
level.
It can't.
Okay,
no, it can't. It won't. I guarantee you, no, it can't. Not with competitive athletes, it won't. No. No.
Sorry. You kind of tell me.
There will be no woman who will be a champion.
Say,
I'm not saying there aren't some women that can be victorious over some men. They will never aspire to the championship. That's why we had women. That's why we have women's sports.
I get that, but I do want to say something to kind of go along with what Shabaka's hinting. And, okay, have you ever heard of a lady named Wing Chun, Sarge?
Yeah, I've seen her.
Yeah.
Okay, no. Wing Chun was a nun who studied. She's basically the mother of a Kung Fu style called Wing Chun, which Ip Man was one of the masters of, and Ip Man was the master of Bruce Lee. And I'm just saying, there's some women that kick a man's ass. I'm keeping it real. You know what I'm saying? Because I've been in those circles. I went to the dojo and I studied Nimpo before, and, man, it's some women that'll kill a man. Break them down like a laptop.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I'm keeping it real. Keeping it real. So I don't want to just put down women or nothing like that. But I'm just saying. I just want to put that out there.
I'm gonna make
I know you're not. I know you're not. I'm talking about me.
Competitive
so,
men versus competitive women. No woman will ever be the champion against them. Ever.
Well,
if it's supported by speed, strength, or power.
I get that, but I'm just saying that there's some women that are to break a man down like a laptop.
I agree with you there. You're right.
And the symbol of martial arts in Kemet, her name was Neet, right? And she's the mother of Ra, Sobeek, and Pep, right? And she was the emblem of martial arts in Egypt, which is really called Kemet. And I just wanted to state something. There's a legend about her, right, that supposedly her and her people came from Western Africa, and they were moving. And they weren't originally from the Nile, but they wanted to drink some of the water from the Nile and bathe themselves in the Nile, you know, because they had traveled so far because it was after the Ice Age.
Right.
A lot of places that were marshy turned into desert. So she goes, remember, this is a legend. So she goes there, and she was the queen of her nation, and she asked, can they use the water? And the people of the Nile said no. So she said, well, if I beat one of your strongest male warriors at martial arts, can we, marry into your nation and also use the water? So they said, yeah. So she whips the male warrior, right? But the people of the Nile, they reneged off the deal. They went against what their word was, and they broke their promise, and they still wouldn't allow them. So she sees all the threads and the materials that their clothing was made out of, And, you know, so
right.
she says, you know, I have materials and I know how to weave better, way better than this. And she showed all her materials and all her
mm-hmm.
weaving south. And then they allowed her and her nation into the Kemetic order at that time. That's
mm-hmm.
a legend, right? But I'm just saying, I just
mm-hmm.
wanted to state that, you know, I just wanted to put that out there. Sorry about that, y'all.
I just like to remind you of present day instances wherein a woman, two women, whom everyone agrees are the best female tennis players of all time. There is no dispute whatsoever. Venus and Serena Williams, and they took up the challenge. They said they could beat any man in the top, well, any man below the top 32. They said they'd be willing to take on any man below the top 32 in tennis. And they believe they could beat anybody ranking below 32. So a German named Hermann Barsch, who was ranked 228th, okay, in the World Tennis Association,
mm-hmm.
228th, he took up the challenge. The night before the match, he partied all night, drank a lot of beer, got up late, then proceeded to whip the two sisters. He beat Serena 6-0, and he beat Venus 6-1 in back-to-back set. He was number 223. And Serena said, I have never, and this is a woman now, she was at her peak when this, she was in her prime, at her very best. She said she had never played against a player with that kind of speed and power. She couldn't even begin to cope. She said as far as she was concerned, she was staying with the women.
Yeah.
She said he learned
yeah,
a lesson.
I saw her say this
in her interview on a late night TV show. And, you know, and also, you know, we've got the example of the women's Olympic soccer team played against a high school team
mm-hmm.
that wasn't even nationally ranked, and they got beat by a bunch of 16-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
We see this over and over and over and over and over again.
I just want to say one thing.
Women are
not
competitive
only
with male competitive athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can I get in?
That's
okay.
Why
I just want to say something to Sarge. I just want to say one
Sarge,
thing to Sarge. Not only do I respect you, but I admire your level of knowledge. I just want to say, put that out there, Sarge. But I just wanted to present one of the rarities in what you're saying. That's all.
There are anomalies and exceptions, and I'm willing.
I don't know anything about the
story you just cited, so I'm going to have to concede you that one. But I'm saying the record is so replete with the number of instances of women being utterly non-competitive. I'm talking about really top-level female athletes when they're placed up against comparable male athletes. I saw one in an Olympic mixed track competition. This woman had a full lap lead in the last lap over every male taking a hand off in the baton. She was the last female taking a hand. Every one of the males in the other teams was a male taking the last hand off in the baton. Every single one of them men caught her, and she had a full lap lead. And she's one of the top baton athletes in the world. Every single man lapped her and finished ahead of her in the final heat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, it's just not fair to do this to women, what they're doing to women. It's not fair. We've got males have advantages not only of muscle size and strength, but of the very way our skeletons are built, the geometry of our skeleton, the angles of the shoulders, and where the femur enters the hip bone, where the ligaments and tendons attach, and the muscle insertions are so much deeper. We've got every physical advantage, almost like the advantage a male, strong male, big, full-grown chimpanzee has over a male athlete. It's almost comparable to that.
Right. Okay.
Well, it does say. I hate to quote the Quran, but the Quran says that God has made man to be the Khalifa or the ruler of the planet Earth. So you know, we're meant to subdue and to rule and dominate in all areas. So you're right about that.
Yeah. It's not women's fault. I mean, that's the way God made us, for God's sake. Why are we acting like, you know, I mean, we're not God. God is God. God made men the way he made them because that's what nature's plan was, for whatever reason.
In the image.
Yes. It's not women's fault. Women have a right to aspire to being a champion. They can't do it unless you give them an unfair handicap against the men. That's not competition.
Well, that's why, you know, you have the women's leagues and you have the guys' leagues. Sorry. You see what I'm saying?
For hundreds of years. Now all of a sudden they think they
okay,
can change
now.
It. And everybody's supposed to say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That's equity. No, it's unfair.
Right, exactly. You see what I'm saying? I agree with you on that. You see?
Now,
and then on top of it as well, too.
All comers should just be able to come along and compete equally if it didn't make a difference. Everybody competes equally.
Mm-hmm.
And just let the chips
mm-hmm.
fall. And we know what's going to happen. Women
mm-hmm.
are going to be like, we can't ever win against these men. Why don't you give us a handicap?
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing I can say about that, Sarge, is this. Okay. Is that, you know, everybody digs the human drama of athletic competition one way or another. You see what I'm saying? Now, just like the greatest, Muhammad Ali, that you had mentioned, okay, is that he, you know, didn't particularly want his daughters fighting, or his son for that matter. But he did state, and let me make sure I'm quoting him right, but if they got the dedication and if they are serious about it, then, you know, he will take them up on it. And Ali's daughter retired undefeated. Layla Ali, she retired undefeated.
Layla.
You see what
Layla
I mean?
Ali.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, she has a twin sister named Hannah. And the Anchorman would know more about that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Anchorman. But Layla has a twin sister named
Hannah. I could bring Muhammad Ali's cousin. Yeah, I wish I could bring a Muhammad Ali's cousin on the show. I'm going to try to get him on one day so we could bring him on.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And I'm gonna try to get him on. He's a very dear friend of mine, and he told me that just switching channels, he said that one of the Muhammad's, or should I say the Ali's, Nico, his grandson, I believe, he's fighting nowadays. I think he's
mm-hmm.
kind of super lightweight or something like that. But his name is Nico.
I got to meet Maymay
at the masjid because I worked for the masjid for years. I'm not a Muslim myself, but I worked for the masjid for years and years.
Yeah, Maymay,
you know,
Miriam is his oldest baby.
Well, I guarantee you that Muhammad Ali knows that competitive sports are good for women. They are good for their health. They're good for their self-esteem. They're good for their competition edge. Sports are great for women. But I can guarantee you, Muhammad Ali, being somewhat of the chauvinist that he was, would never want his daughter to compete against men. I can guarantee well to you that.
You got to compete
against other women.
Yeah, and I don't think that Ali would have endorsed this transgenderism crap all.
Not a bit.
Muhammad Ali was completely conventional,
and so were his sexual mores. He was the ultimate heterosexual.
That's the accolade you have of being heavyweight champ. You know what I'm saying? You know, yeah, you're right about that, Sarge. You know what I mean?
He may have made all that jive about him being pretty and all that, but he was 100% man. You better believe that.
Word is bomb.
He was 100% man, and he was going to be looking at his daughters trying to box against other men of a comparable weight class and competitive skill level. No way.
Well, I agree with you on that there, Sarge. That we do agree on, but just changing the subject a little bit here, keeping it, you know, along in the line of what we're talking about. Now, Sarge, what do you think about Mr. Ralph Yarl, the young man who was shot in the head in Kansas City by a white man for knocking on the wrong door, and he was trying to go find his twin brothers to bring him home? Now, what's your opinion on that? That's the latest in the news right now.
Okay, what I've read of it is, and I always, every time these incidents come up, the first thing I say is, I got to read the indictment, I got to see the evidence presented against the person, because he always, I don't care who it is, I don't care if somebody I hate, they got the presumption of innocence going in any controversy, always. So I haven't read the indictment, I haven't seen the evidence. Based upon what I've heard, it looks like he may have panicked and shot the kid. But I also like to point out that in Alabama, a 20-year-old white woman who pulled into the wrong driveway was shot to death by a white man who thought she was an intruder. Now, that happened the day after Ralph Yarl got shot to death, almost shot to death or wounded. So, I mean, I understand how these things can happen. I understand what people are saying. But I'm going to reserve judgment until I see the indictment. Go read what the law says again in St. Louis, this happening? Yeah. St. Louis, Missouri. I'm going to read what the law says in Missouri. See what the evidence is. Read the indictment. And then I'll make a preliminary opinion. Right now, I don't have enough information to do it.
Okay, now let me tell you what I know, Sarge. I personally think that this dude, this is my opinion, okay, but I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts. I got $2 in my pocket to my name, Sarge, and if you got a, let's say, a chocolate donut right there, I bet it that against my $2. I honestly believe that what the dump has put in the air today as far as race relations, that he was just looking for an NGR to shoot, just like your boy Liam Neeson. The movie actor, Liam Neeson, stated a while back on social media that he had wanted to kill a black person, preferably a black male. Now, what do you think goes through my mind when I hear such statements? What do you think goes through my mind, Stars, when I hear such statements?
I think there was a little bit of difference with what Liam Neeson said. I get your point. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that's exactly what he said, all right? Anybody who makes a statement like that is clearly unhinged, because you don't just shoot people of any race for no reason. You got to have a damn good moral and legal reason to shoot them. So, I mean, there's not much arguing about what to think about a statement like that. There's only one way to think about a statement like that. That's just something you can't do.
So, I mean, it goes without saying.
But here's the problem when it gets nuanced, man, like this thing with this guy. Did he really believe this kid was trying to break into his house? Did he have a reasonable belief that he was? He may not have. I don't know. But I'm simply saying that will be the question. And if it, since it is an affirmative defense, you know, raising the issue of self-defense is an affirmative defense, that's what his defense team is going to have to raise in trial. We know how it is to be wrongfully accused of stuff, don't we? Don't, even when the evidence looks like you probably did it. Don't black people know what it's like to be wrongfully accused of stuff?
Yeah. Tell me about it, Sarge. You know what I'm saying? So tell me about it.
I'm going to be agnostic until I see the evidence and I read the indictment. I'm agnostic. I don't know either way. He ain't innocent. He's innocent legally, but I'm going to reserve judgment until I see the evidence myself.
Okay. All right, but the thing is, though, Sarge, is that the hatred of this country that it has for black people or for non-whites, right, how can they atone for it? Okay, now, this asshole who is the governor of Florida, the panties, I don't call him the Santies, I say the panties, okay, he is sick, man, okay, he is sick. Do you know how notorious Florida was of how it treated its slaves, man? Do you know that down there in Florida, they used to take black babies, man, and feed them to alligators at date? And DeSantis has the audacity, up here in Temecula, California, when they're trying to, well, we don't need to know that history, and you denying black children of knowledge of themselves, and this is why I've advocated, Sarge, and you've been acquainted with me for, you know, for quite a few now. This is why I say take our children out of these public indoctrination centers. You see what I'm saying? We have a right to our self-determination. We have a right, you know, to own land, to build businesses for ourselves, just like what they did in Oklahoma with the Black Wall Street in 1921. You know, they burned it to the ground. It was the economical center for black business. You see what I mean? And then even Dr. King had said before he was murdered is that I led our people into the burning house of immigration. And he did. When I look at shit like Donald Dump, okay, the panties of Florida, who does not want the truth taught about America's brutalization towards, you know, black folks. And then let's say even people of color. This is one of the few times I'm going to use it, is because, as you know, in San Francisco, California, they used to persecute the Chinese real bad during the gold rush in the 1850s. You see what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. They really did. You see, but as the anchor man has stated, they had certain knowledge from the temples of Shaolin, Wing Chun, plus San Francisco Bruce Lee. He grew up in Hong Kong. You see what I'm saying? And that's where he learned his art, you see. But however, Maya Angelou was born and raised in San Francisco as well, too. Look at Maya Angelou, the abuse that she had been through. You see what I'm saying? Why she wrote the book, Why the Caged Bird Don't Sing. You know, Ms. Angela was violated, you know, as a child. And the fool who did this to her died in jail. And Ms. Angela, from what I understand, I have to read the book, okay, thought that she had killed him, you know, by singing or something to that point. But that fool got what he deserved, you know, violating a child, okay. Just like on the plantation system, starts what Black Friday was all about, of how they'd take young black girls and sell them, you know, to slave traders to breed with them. Those, Sarge, are acts wrong within themselves. You see, all the hate mail that I get here on Facebook and Tweety Bird and all this old type of stuff, idiots that we had call in like your boy Pianchi, you know what I mean? And Pianchi don't know what he's talking about. You know, I feel sorry for Pianchi, but however, I leave the man to his ignorance. And if you out there, Pianchi, you know the number, 516-418-5996. Now, I made an error with Pianchi one night, Sarge, and I think you was on the show, okay? It's because, you know, our co-host and our co-producer, Trey Krumer, was hosting the show, and I came in on the late for it. Pianchi was on. And I told Pianchi what the ground rules were, okay? And I prematurely had Pianchi kicked off the air. Now, I tried to reach out to Pianchi on Mr. Talk Show. I think I tried to reach out to Pianchi there on Joe Gibson's show, and Pianchi did not accept my apology. Okay, great, beautiful. I understand that. Okay. I respect him that. But Pianchi is wrong about a lot of stuff of what he says. He thinks that I'm wrong. Man, you ought to see how often I sit up here and read and research. I also go back to the parts that I've lived in my life. You see what I'm saying? And I remember, you know, when Muhammad Ali had got up there and said, I ain't got no quarrel with the Viet Cong. You know what I'm saying? White America is my enemy. They ain't never raped our women. They ain't never killed our babies. They ain't never hung us from trees to cut off our private parts and put it off in their mouth. You see what I'm saying? That's not racist. That shit there is psychotic, you see? So you see along the same line of why Christopher Dorner did what he did. Now, Sarge, back to Chi-Town, the Windy City. And I know it gets windy off of Lake Michigan, you know what I'm saying? But as you know, Sarge, they call it the Windy City because of all the hot air that the corrupt politicians, you know, used to say. That's why they call it the Windy City. Riddle me this. What about that cop in Chicago that shot Laquan McDonald? Well, he shot him and he killed him and he's on the ground, okay, and he still discharges his firearm because when I saw the video, you could still see the bullets shooting off the ground. What's up on that one there, Sarge? Educate me on that.
You do know that officer was sentenced to prison, don't you? The officer in that shooting, Jason Van Dyke. Jason Van Dyke was convicted and sentenced to prison.
Yeah, a boy, a Dutch. Yeah, right. One of the most hateful of all the slave traders. His ass should be getting a death penalty,
well,
Sarge.
I don't think
he should be walking the concrete in general population, Sarge. Okay?
That's what should be happening to him.
I will hold him responsible for killing Laquan McDonald, but not the slave trade. I'm sorry. I just can't do that.
No. Sorry. What I'm saying is that you've heard on this platform many times the most brutal of the slave traders were the Dutch, okay? Then next came the French. Then we're not going to talk about the Belgians, okay? And this is why, sorry, when people suggest that we forgive and forget, we can't do that. You know why, Sarge? Because we owe it to the generations after us. And just like the anchor man has pointed out, why do you think they got all these black males coming up effeminized, man? It's because of the systemic brutalization and the humiliation and the public execution of black males. You know, they would always...
Yeah, they want to weaken our people, General. They want to weaken us.
Thank you.
I'm saying they want to weaken us.
No, no,
you're
not interrupting at all.
They want to criminalize us. They want to put us in... They want to... send us back mentally and physically, you know, instead of helping us improve, they're trying to throw us back into being dumb, deaf, and blind.
Exactly, Jesse.
Well,
that's exactly what that is.
The more important thing, even as important as convicting Jason Van Dyke of Laquan McDonald's murder, was what the cover-up with the mayor's office was revealed, the corruption at the highest levels of the executive branch of the city of Chicago. They were engaged in a cover-up, in handing out settlements surreptitiously, hiding information from the city council. All of that came out in the wake of that shooting, and I'm glad it did.
Hey, yeah. Chewbacca calls it conspiracy. Well, what you call it, Chewbacca? Conspiracy.
Conspiracy. You see, and then not to mention, Sarge, as you know, okay, the Chicago Police Department is one of the most corrupt police agencies behind the New York City Police Department, the San Francisco Police Department, the Philadelphia Police Department, the Newark, New Jersey Police Department, the Cleveland Police Department. You see what I'm saying? Now, the problem with the lapdogs, which I call the Los Angeles Police Department. They had a hateful so-and-so who called himself cleaning it up by the name of William H. Parker. In fact, they even named police headquarters at one time before they tore it down called Parker Center. That's where they booked your boy O.J. Simpson at doing O.J. case, okay? He was a hateful so-and-so. He specialized in recruiting officers from the South at that time because he was the chief between 1949 to 1966. Okay. Now, L.A. had its first black lieutenant who used to work Central Division of the LAPD. And he was known for stomping ass, whooping ass, and taking names. And he was a big dude, you know what I'm saying? Because I've seen him in person. He was a big dude, about 6'6". Do you know what his name was, Sarge?
What's that?
His name was Tom Bradley.
Oh, yeah.
L.A.'s first black man.
Mayor Bradley.
Yeah. He was L.A.'s first black mayor, Tom Bradley, right? And then the crumb bum on the city of Los Angeles, Karen Bass, go ahead and resign. Because you ain't doing nothing for black folks right there. And plus that off the social media information I got unconfirmed reports, you know, the Asian community had showed up at her house protesting. Saying about how they're not making no money in their businesses because of the homeless in camp. So therefore, she had Public Works and the Public Works and Sanitation Department go all up and down Venice Boardwalk, taking people's stuff, throwing it in the trash, the homeless in camp, their personal property.
Damn.
Why did she do
doing that in Denver?
Because like Hollywood, Anchorman, because as we all know, what is Los Angeles famous for besides palm trees and Hollywood? Venice, big tourist trap. You got people from all over the world that comes there to see the Pacific Ocean and see the sun set in the ocean, Sarge, as opposed to where you at, where you see the sun rise over the Atlantic. You see? Okay. And my point is, Okay, let me finish this here, Anchorman, then I'm turning it over to you. Okay, But the thing is this thought, okay, is because L.A. has its own history of its discrimination. The one is Blake, from what I understand, in the South. But you had a whole lot of those attitudes and mores that came from the South. It's because William H. Parker recruited the majority of his police officers from places like Mississippi, like Oklahoma, like Louisiana, like Georgia. You see what I'm saying? And then when you had certain individuals who was going to L.A. to retire, Parker would send LAPD to these individuals to let them know that, hey, man, we know what you are. We know what you're doing, man. We're monitoring you, man. But, you know, we're going to keep it squeaky clean out here. And I'm not going to say any names, anything like that. But you know, we generally got a general idea. Just read this book called Chief by Daryl F. Gates. And Daryl F. Gates, like I stated before, he was a psychopath, okay, but he tried to rationalize his hatred of black people. You see what I mean? He tried to rationalize, okay? And then even Gates was so powerful, he even had Tom Bradley knuckling down to him. You know what I'm saying? And Bradley was the mayor. But keep in mind is that the mayor is only a figurehead in the city of Los Angeles. He does not have no direct executive power over the LAPD. That's what they got the commissions for, okay? In Chicago, Denver, you know, the mayor is the chief executive right there. But the way the LA City Charter is set up is the commission that have all the power. And then there was a guy who passed away who was an attorney that's known to the world, who was on one of the commissions, I believe the commission, the airport commission, because L.A., believe it or not, had a quote-unquote department of airports, believe it or not. And that guy's name was Johnny Cochran. You see what I mean? Yeah. And Johnny Cochran did a lot, you know, taking a lot of cases pro bono in black Los Angeles, such as the Deadwild case. You see what I'm saying? Such as the Eula Love case that we had stated before. And this is why I appreciated Brother Parrish, you know, running for mayor with the Black First Agenda, that there was the first time that I ever heard any politician of African descent saying that I got a Black First Agenda. Now, Barack Obama, he could have did a whole lot for black folks. He could have got him out of prison. He could have had more self-help programs, you know, on the south and west side of Chicago, in south central Los Angeles, in east and west Oakland, you know, there in parts of Cleveland, same thing with Detroit, definitely down in the southern United States when it came to agriculture and what happened. You see what I'm saying? This is why it's important for us to decide our own self-determination, you see, because this critical race theory wants to erase the brutalization that our children need to know about it, because it makes white folks feel uncomfortable. Can you imagine how uncomfortable Emmett Till was when they murdered him? Can you imagine how uncomfortable the Scottsboro boys were, you know, when they were murdered? Can you imagine how uncomfortable all them brothers that they hung and lynched, castrated on the trees of the South because white women falsely accused them of rape? How uncomfortable were them? So therefore, the governor of Florida and Donald Doug Trump can kiss my ass. Now, the thing is, I do respect about both these no-good pieces of garbage is that they are telling you how they honestly feel. And there's an old saying in South Central Los Angeles: never apologize for how you honestly feel. Okay? So like I said,
that's the enemy letting you know he's
the dumb
girl.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? Exactly. Okay, just like how they say the woman who went and picked up the snake and cared for the snake and all this other type of shit, then the snake turns around and bites her, and then she says, oh, I can't
see you. I'm a snake.
You bit me. And what does the snake say? Lady, you knew I was a snake when you picked me up. Okay.
I let you know from the beginning.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? I mean, come on. We're dealing with adults here. This isn't romper room. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
elementary school. And then not to mention as such, okay, little Ruby Ridges, a little black girl, 6 years old, going to school with either Little Rock or Montgomery, okay? And nobody wanted to teach the little girl. They were threatening the little girl's family. They were threatening the little girl herself. She's only 6 years old. So, and they had the National Guard out there to escort this little baby to school. And this is why I can't stand that raggedy-looking-ass broad down there, the governor of Arkansas, Governor Hiccup. You know what I'm saying? The woman looks like garbage, okay? And she's going to want to sit down and tear down the memorial to the Little Rock Nine, and the nine black students, you know, that went to Little Rock High School in 1957, which they were degraded, humiliated, spat upon, and what have you. Particularly what they did to Elizabeth X. And you can look at the file footage over that. You say, but we supposed to sit up there and say, how's it going? We love us. This is why I cannot stand the movie actor Samuel L. Jackson. And Mr. Jackson, you're welcome to call in. This number two, partner, and I would tell you on the air. We've had celebrities on here before. Okay. Mm. Why are you going to sit up there and play that no good role that you did in the movie Django with Jamie Foxx? Okay. Now, I could understand, hold it. Now, I could understand if Mr. Jackson was doing that early in his career, trying to come up in his career, already an established actor.
He feels
why would he belittle himself like that? Precisely my point. You know, you won't see Larry Fishburne playing no crap like that. Although when he played Ike Turner, I hated him when he played Ike Turner. Thank you. You see what I'm saying? Thank you. You know what I'm saying? And then of course, Angela Bassett, you know, who got stepped over, you know, for getting the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress of being the Queen Mother of Wakanda. Who you give it to? You give it to Tony Curtis's daughter, Jamie Lee Curtis. Playing some BS movie or whatnot. Come on. See, this is why I say F Hollywood, Charles. This is why I did a live feed from Hollywood Boulevard right up there by the Kodak Theater and told him how I honestly felt. Brother Paris to tell you. Because he was watching the live feed, you know. And then I saw that John Singleton got him a star on the Hollywood Boulevard Walk of Fame, as well as he should have. You see what I mean? But the point is that when we do not control the projection of our image, when we sit up here and sell out to other groups to portray us, it's a situation destined to fail. You see, why don't some of these rappers and black movie people? Oh, and I believe Tyler Perry did, and correct me if I'm wrong, Anchorman, where he had started Tyler Perry Pictures down in Atlanta, GA, Atlanta, Georgia, okay, and show some positiveness about our people, you know, about the great legacies of where we come from, our contribution to the world's science. Dr. George Washington Carr, just like Sarge, you and I went back and forth on Joe Gibson's show about Dr. Charles Drew.
Well, you do know, but this is a matter of correcting now. You do know that none of the Scottsboro boys were executed. They all eventually wound up having their sentences either commuted or they were granted pardon. None of them were executed, even though they were scheduled to be executed three different times. But none of them actually wound up being executed.
Okay, now what about George Finney? The 14-year-old that they executed.
He was executed.
He wasn't even 18 years old. You know what I'm saying? But you see,
didn't Bill Clinton sign a death warrant for some retarded guy?
Damn. Something like that. I believe Clinton did.
They gave him his final meal, and he said, save it for me for when I get back.
Brother Paris said about these Democrats, okay, because they're the ones that brought you the Ku Klux Klan.
You know what I'm saying?
Can I
yeah.
say
and then
something?
Of course, as you know, General Romero, say that again now.
No, I was just waiting for my chance to get in there real quick. Go ahead.
No, yeah, go ahead, Romero. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to say that I respect the man that hates me outwardly and openly than a man that hates me in his heart and conspires against me. And I think a lot of times that's the difference between Donald Trump and Biden. You know, a big difference.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You know,
there you go.
So, you know, keeping it real. Now, I think, you know, we live in the United States of America. The United States of America is supposed to be the land of milk and honey, but it's become a place of slavery, suffering, and death. The slavery is shown by the drug addiction and our people being in the penal system. The suffering comes from the persecution that we have to, you know, endure every day. You know, our people being killed, persecuted, massacred. Then the death is the mental death, the miseducation of a nation, you know, where they're keeping us dumb, deaf, and blind to ourselves, our past, and our future.
Right.
I think that if these Caucasians that are in power really care, that they should put more programs out there that keep housing programs, that keep the family unit together, and that promote family unity instead of just that single mother thing where the husband can't live there, the boyfriend can't live there, all that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It seems like, you know, they're trying to, just like slavery, they're trying to keep the family component in disaccord and, you know, divided. And I think that they need to implement more drug programs instead of sending people to prison, you know, deal with some kind of rehabilitation, because they're the reason our people are even committing crimes. They're the reason, they're the cause of it.
Right.
So since they're the cause, they need to be the ones to make the atonement and make the amends themselves and initiate that amends. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And then to prove your point even further, too, Romero, I remember, let me see, elementary school. So for me, that there would be the late 1960s, the early 1970s. And I'll never forget, I am sitting in the sixth grade. In walks the lap dogs. Okay. Two LAPD officers. And they got these kits that they're passing around to the children. Drug or resistance education or whatever they call it. MJ, LSD, various pills, opioids, and what have you. And kids have never seen this crap before. You know, the LAPD is pushing it around. Gates called it drug awareness resistance education. Okay. So then what happened is there's that old saying. What do you do when you tell a child to keep his hand out of the cookie jar? What's the first thing he's going to do?
Right in general. He's going to do it.
No, exactly. Yeah, that's the same friggin' principle with that. You see what I'm saying? And then the Clinton regime, the regime after him and before him, or the Bush regime, the Reagan regime, Bush regime, Clinton regime, they're the ones that's responsible for the massive narcotics, man, throughout the U.S. that has thoroughly messed up, you know, the whole black community because they were the target of it. Now, you're going to have other groups that, well, what about this group? What about that group? This, that, that, the other. And you know what my response is to them? I'm not of that group. I don't know history. You see what I'm saying? But I'm sure that you all would deal with your situation. And this is why I advocate that the black man and woman here in the U.S., throughout the whole diaspora and on the continent, to the Caribbean, to Brazil, you see what I'm saying, Haiti, Santo Domingo, you know what I'm saying, Cuba, the whole nine yards.
Word is life.
We are all we got. Yeah,
we are all we got, General.
And
at
this
the end
is the
of
only
day.
Way we're yeah, this is all we got. And then even though there was a brother who was saying that, in Africa,
You know what I'm saying? The coca that the Chinese want. We got to get the Chinese out of there. We got the Belgians up out of there. We got the Portuguese up out of there. You know, look at the history of Motama that is called modern day Angola. Now, old Hyde and Biden, he sends his crew over there with old Kamala Harris, you know what I'm saying, telling them to take this alphabetized agenda, or otherwise we're going to cut off your aid. And President Museveni of Uganda said, hey, man, y'all, get out. Mm. Take it with you. You know what I'm saying? Y'all still here? Hey, just like the president of Kenya, when Barack Obama goes over there, the president of Kenya said, well, welcome, Mr. Obama, to Kenya. This is your ancestral land. You know, we're interested in some economical development right here, some agriculture and what have you. What's the first thing Obama starts talking about? The hidden agenda. They shut Obama down. You heard me say this here before, Sarge. They told Obama, hey, man, you know, you got to go to the airport. You're going to leave Kenya. Then Obama was scheduled to stop in Ethiopia. Okay? The head of state in Ethiopia got in touch with Obama on Air Force One. Hey, man, we heard about your escapade down there in Nairobi. Man, don't bother landing now to stop by because we already cleared out the work on in detail for you and all that. Man, don't even plan it. Now, my question is, when it comes to Ethiopia, those women, they are hypnotic people. So why would you want to put, you know, an agenda in Ethiopia like that? You know, so you got customs and antiquities on the continent that's been down there for thousands of years. But this alternative agenda, that shit originated in Greece, man. You know what I'm saying? Read Professor George G.
Man, it comes from a planet called Punk, General. A planet called Punk.
Yeah, exactly. You see, you know, they want to sit up there and say that we're racist because we want to embrace our ancestral ways and traditions that they always tell. They don't say that to the Latin people. They don't say that to the Asian people. They damn sure don't say it to the Europeans. But when it comes to the African people, you guys are being racist. You know, just like that.
You know what I got to say to that, General? There's a philosopher, I don't remember what his name was, but he says, I can't be so open-minded that my brain falls out.
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? Exactly.
Well, can we not realize, though, that, look, the Europeans didn't start their real scramble for Africa until the late 19th century. Prior to that, they were confined mainly to the coast, where African kings ruled and would often, well, not often, but on occasion, they would hang slavers who ran afoul of the rules that the kings and the chiefs had set up for the slave trade. The Africans didn't start going into the interior of Africa until the late 19th century. And by the 1960s, most African countries were on their way to independence. So the Europeans really didn't rule sub-Saharan Africa all that long.
Right. Okay, sorry.
I got a question for Sarge real quick, General, if I could. Have you ever read a book called Germs, Guns, and Steel, Mr. Sarge?
Yes, I have it in my library. Jared Diamond.
Oh, okay, that's an awesome book. Yeah. Can you expound a little bit on that history real quick?
He seems to take the view that the conquest of Africa was largely aided by the incidental or deliberate introduction of germs into the African population. And it was the steel technologies of Europeans that enabled their conquest. Now, I'm oversimplifying it, but that's pretty much what it was. I don't necessarily agree with all of that thesis. But his book was interesting.
Disease, because you know them people. Something I know about the Europeans is that they plan their plots 100 years prior to executing.
Yeah, Yeah, but you got to remember, man, the Europeans, what the reason the Europeans didn't go in the sub-Saharan Africa for the most part, because they didn't have quinine yet. And just like the Indians didn't have any resistance to smallpox, they didn't have any to malaria. And they stayed out because they knew for many Europeans it was a death sentence until the invention of quinine enabled them to go into the interior of Africa. That's one of the reasons they didn't try to conquer the interior of Africa.
Go ahead, Jim.
So, I mean, we talk about germs work against the Europeans colonizing Africa sooner. It wasn't until Stanley Livingston did that expedition of his that they became interested in going into the interior.
So what happened where they used the Gatling gun against the Zulu nation? Is that that's when they used the Gatling gun, right?
Actually, it was the Maxim machine gun, which was the first fully automatic weapon that was introduced there. And yes, and they even made a poem about it. The reason we have got is because we have got the Maxim gun and they have not. And yeah, there's no doubt that the Battle of Blood River, the British with the Maxim gun totally dominated Zulu. Now, we got to remember, though, this is after Rorke's Drift and the Battle of Isandlwana. The Maxim gun didn't come on until a little bit later. So the British were already well on their way to conquering southern Africa even before the Maxim gun came along. It just made it a lot easier. But that same machine gun could be turned against Europeans just a few years hence in the bloodiest warfare to date when trench warfare came along and the heavy water-cooled machine gun dominated the battlefield.
Okay, now, so
interesting. Go ahead,
now, as you know.
Drop it.
Okay, okay. Because, see, as you know, South Africa, had King Shaka, who was a military tactician, It's because the king that fell under the British was, let me make sure I got it right.
He was the king at the time.
He was the king
at the time. Actually fought the British. Shaka didn't fight the British directly. He died before that happened.
What happened was,
King Sitiswayo. He was the king of the Zulu nation at the time of the Zulu Wars.
Okay, but that's just it, though. But Shaka was the one that formed the Zulu nation.
He organized the Zulu impis. In their fighting regiment and developed the tactics that they used.
Exactly. Now, here's something for you. Do you know what the word Zulu means, Sarge?
KwaZulu, it actually is the name you're talking about, right?
Yeah, right.
I think
but what it is this.
It was KwaZulu.
Okay, but hold on, Sarge. The thing is about Shaka. He worshiped lightning and thunder, and that's what it means. Okay.
Yes.
Lightning and thunder.
I didn't know that, General. You just enlightened me, General. Thank you.
Okay. Now, the source of this information was a brother I used to work with, who was from South Africa, who was Zulu. Shaka worshiped lightning and thunder. The man was very intelligent. Okay, military technician, but one thing about Shaka.
He's a Napoleon of Southern Africa. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, but if anything, Shaka was not so much a black Napoleon as Napoleon was a white Shaka. Okay, let's get it real now.
Well, Napoleon came along first, so, you got to get Napoleon his due. He was there prior to Shaka.
Okay, hold on, Sarge, let me do so. You know what, Sarge, I think I halfway stand corrected because I think that they were contemporaries at that time, although I don't think that they ever met, but I think they were in the same time.
But Shaka was a later contemporary of Napoleon. Napoleon got his start in the late 18th century, and Zulu and Shaka didn't get his start until the
early 19th century.
I got a question right along the lines of warriors. Lord Saladin, where was he from, Sarge?
Who?
Lord Saladin, who was involved in the
Saladin was a Kurd. He was a Kurd.
Okay.
Yeah, that was up
that's why I asked.
The area that is now Iraq, actually, right around Iraq and the Western Palestine. Yeah, so
he wasn't
Muslim, but he was a Kurd before, actually. Not actually
What's
a Muslim. He fought for the Muslims, but he wasn't a Muslim himself. He was a general contracted, more or less.
Okay, well, what was his belief system, if you don't mind me asking?
I can't remember what the religion is.
Was it Zoroastrianism?
It might have been. It might have been, yeah.
Okay, because that's real big in Persia. And correct me if I'm wrong, but in Zoroastrianism, they call evil spirits drugs. Am I right about that, or am I wrong?
I think you're pretty much on the money, sir.
Okay. Yeah, because I just started reading one of their holy books. It's pretty interesting, but the reason I even brought it up is because, you know, along the lines of warriors and all that. So Lord Saladin, was he prior or after Napoleon?
Oh, he was much prior to that, man. That was like 12th century.
Okay.
I mean, Napoleon was around in the 19th century, man. The Battle of Waterloo happened in 1815. Saladin
happened at 1180 something.
Actions during the Crusades. I think during the Third Crusade or the Fourth Crusade, that was in the late 12th century or the middle of 12th century.
The original Hebrews that were there in Jerusalem during that time got exiled into Egypt and Ethiopia. Is that correct, Sarge?
Who's that? Which ones was what? With
the original Hebrews that lived in Jerusalem during the time of the Crusades in the 70, oh, pardon me, prior to that, in 70 A.D., is it true that the original Hebrews got exiled into Egypt in Ethiopia? Is that true?
Oh, you're talking about Falasha Jews. In Ethiopia.
Right, the original ones.
Right. They were part of the tribe, but they weren't the whole thing.
Okay, now, as we all know,
that
the Ethiopians, as we all know, the Ethiopians ain't lost a military campaign since 1100 A.D., because the last cat that came through there, that he was taking Ethiopia. Now, wait a minute. The last dude that came through there talking about he's taking over Ethiopia, man, they handed him his hat. His name was
Battle of Padua in 1893 or 1898.
Right.
Yeah, the Italians were
defeated
militarily.
World War II.
But they came back
prior
to World War II in 1936, and they conquered Ethiopia then.
Sarge, wait a minute. I hate to contradict you, Sarge. Okay, I'm going to have to pull some
They won militarily in the Battle of Edowa, E-D-O-W-A. They defeated the expeditionary force the Italians sent in Ethiopia. And that's why Mussolini had a grievance against Ethiopians, because he wanted revenge for that defeat. And that's when he decided to invade them in 1936, and the League of Nations didn't do a damn thing. And by that time, they simply were not competitive with a relatively modern and mechanized Italian army, and they were defeated.
Sarge, are you sure? Okay, because my information, man, that I've got.
I mean, remember the big scandal when the Japanese and the Italians walked out of the League of Nations? The world was condemned. The League of Nations was ineffectual, but they did. Haile Selassie went to the League of Nations to appeal to them to do something about the Italian invasion of Ethiopia. And the League of Nations was ineffectual and could do nothing.
Okay, so then what happened?
They overran Ethiopia, and it wasn't liberated until 1940 when the British fought the Italians in North Africa. And they defeated the Italians, and drove them out of all their colonies in Libya, Libya was one of them. And because you remember, in North Africa, there was all kind of fighting up and down the Mediterranean coast for all of those Italian colonies in North Africa. And the British defeated the Italian army, which is why Hitler, in order to bail out his Italian allies, sent General Rommel and the Africa Corps into North Africa.
Yeah.
Question, Sarge.
Yeah.
Quick question, Sarge. Let me ask you a question. Romel.
What's up?
Is it true that Ethiopia only conquered a small portion of Ethiopia? They didn't conquer the whole country of Ethiopia. It was just a small portion.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm talking about, Brother Trey. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Because from what I understand, Haile Selassie was undefeated, you know, as the ruler.
Haile Selassie went into exile. He actually left the country. He was given refuge by the British because he didn't want to be captured by the Italians because they had completely subdued the country in every part that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they didn't. No, they didn't. Ethiopia.
Okay, your brother, Che, can you pull some? Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm reading from Exploring Africa Matrix, MSU, EDU, Battle of Ottawa-Ethiopia. The Battle of Ottawa, Ethiopia. As you have already learned, Ethiopia, along with Liberia, were the only African countries that have not been colonized by Europeans. It was that European powers were not interested in colonizing Ethiopia. There were. Ethiopia was able to resist attempts of colonization by British and particularly by the Italians. Indeed, Italy was able to colonize a part of ancient Ethiopia, the area along the Red Sea. This was the colony and now independent country of Eritrea under the leadership of Emperor Malik. Ethiopia resisted European attempts to colonize all of Ethiopia. Ethiopia won a decisive battle over Italy at the Battle of Ottawa, December 1895. During the battle, approximately 4,000 Italian soldiers were killed. So are you talking about after this? Because it says the Battle of Ottawa.
Oh, yes. I'm talking about 1936 to 1941. In fact, Ethiopia was no more colonized than France was colonized when the Germans occupied France. They occupied it. They never colonized Ethiopia. They defeated the Ethiopians militarily, and they occupied the country. Now, they were liberated in 1941 in the East African campaign with the help of Ethiopian guerrillas and British Empire forces, mainly Indians and some Kenyan African rifles and British European units. All four of those forces liberated Ethiopia from the Africans. I mean, it wasn't a really big, intense campaign because the Italians didn't have the resources to fight in North Africa and maintain their occupation of Ethiopia. But they did kick them out.
Sarge, you're describing second Italo-European Ethiopian War. That is not the same as the Battle of Ottawa.
No, I know it isn't. That's what I'm saying. Ethiopia was never occupied by European. I mean, never colonized. That's what I meant to say. It was occupied, but it was never colonized.
Okay, you said at the Battle of Ottawa.
I mean, France was occupied by Germany, but you couldn't call France a colony of Germany simply because they defeated it and occupied it. It was similar to what the Italians did.
Okay, but the French, as you know, Brother Che, and as you know, two stars, those were some of the most brutal slave traders gone. Look at the history of Louisiana. When I traveled through Louisiana, man, that place scared me, man. And I only been through the South one time, man. You know what I'm saying? I ain't never gone back to the South. I'm too old now. Now, if I was 40 years younger, you see, maybe I would have. But at the age I am right now, man, I don't care to see the Southern United States no more, man. It's because that the whole brutalization of European dominance over African peoples, rather if it's on a continent, rather if it's in South America, rather if it's
in the Caribbean, you know what I'm saying? Rather if it's Mexico, man. Rather if it's in the United States, man. Just like Elijah Muhammad said, that's why they called the white man a blonde-haired, blue-eyed devil. Look at his history.
And by the way, Battle of Ottawa is considered one of the greatest military disasters for any European nation fighting in Africa in the history of warfare. It's considered maybe one of the top, in the top 20, maybe even in the top 10. So there's no doubt that the Ethiopians were victorious in the 19th century, but they were certainly not in the 20th.
Okay, but Ethiopia, man, you know, is one of the ancient kingdoms. Now, here's one for you. Okay, what about Mansa Musa, you know, the king of the Songhai Empire?
What about him? He was one of the richest men in history. He was also a great slaver.
No, he was the richest man. No, he wasn't a slaver, Sarge.
Oh, yes, he was.
He wasn't a slave. He was
the whole economy of the Mali Empire rested on the slave trade.
Sarge, okay, you and I have had this dispute before on three different programs, man, and we're going to have it on this one. Okay, first place, man, what had happened is, man, when African nations or sub-nations engaged in combat, okay, it was not that the victor was saying, the loser is my property. They were just simply incorporated into the winning nation. This is how Shaka built the Zulu Empire. Okay, this is the same thing, you know, that they did with the Mansa Musa, with the Songhai. You see what I'm saying? The one who came there with lies, deceit, and evilness was that European. Just like the same thing he did in the United States of America. He brought the indigenous people here to the United States of America, the first form of biological warfare. He gave them blankets with smallpox in it. You see what I'm saying?
Baca.
He goes down there. Go ahead, Anchorman.
Go ahead. Finish your thought, brother. I was going to switch channels on another thing. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, yeah, but first let me finish saying this here. But it was not the brutalization of when the Europeans have got a hold of slaves. See, this is why I say the biggest damn lie ever told was that black people sold themselves into slavery. The Europeans, just like he did here in the United States, he came with divide and conquer techniques, okay? Read the history of Her Majesty Queen Nzinga, okay, down in Angola, you see? The Portuguese says, oh, you're a colony of Portugal. She says, I beg your pardon. And then they told her again, she says, it's time for you to shake the spot. And then when they didn't, she went out there, gave the order. She spent her whole adult life of 50 years of fighting them savages. And they finally got them hurt in 1975. You see what I'm saying? So Queen Nzinga was around in the 1500s. You see, Sarge, this is the history that our people need to know of themselves, not this prepackaged Eurocentric bullshit that they scared into our kids in this public indoctrination center. It's because that itself ingrained into them a form of self-hatred. I mean, Malcolm X taught you that in autobiography of Malcolm X.
That's called trick knowledge, General. You're right.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like trickery.
Yeah, you see, exactly. Yeah, that's what it is. See, this isn't hatred. This isn't racism. Okay, just like I try to tell those, with the on Joe Gibson show and the other conservative show I've been on, that I've been called every NGR, every this, that, there, the other, what have you, that they just simply prove the point is because the European didn't even know how to wash his funky ass, man. It was the Ethiopian woman that showed the white women of Europe with feminine hygiene. Okay.
Well, the Romans used soap, you know. I mean, the Romans did use soap. I mean, it's clear that they had
soap.
What happened during the Dark Ages?
They did not believe in bathing, Sarge. The same thing like with the British.
The Europeans had hot water baths in Rome. I mean, they were known and famed for their hot water baths.
Okay. But I have something to say about that. But did you know that two or three of the Roman emperors were African? So maybe they had to do with African influence.
I think. Are you sure you're not thinking of the latter Egyptian dynasties? They were ruled by Sudanese rulers.
You could Google this. Two or three of the Roman emperors were African.
But not sub-Saharan African.
Go ahead and Google right now.
Weren't sub-Saharan African, though.
They were still African.
And they were African, yes, but they weren't sub-Saharan Africans. They were they were from the area around Carthage and Libya and Iraq. I'm trying to think of their names.
Okay, hold on. Whoa. Hold on, Sarge. Wait a minute. Hold on, Anchorman. Hold on, Brother Jay. You said a key word right there, Sarge. Carthage. Okay. Now you talking about Hannibal. Okay. Now, here we go.
Exactly.
All right. So, Canaanites. Hannibal told his generals, hey, man, we're going to go smash Caesar, man. We're going to have him check the spot. Not Julius Caesar, Augustus Caesar. Okay. So what Hannibal said was, hey, man, we're going all the way from Carthage, which is now modern-day Tunisia. Okay. And he told his boys, hey, man, we're going up here, man. We're going to go up here, man, and we're smashing them, man. We're shutting them down. And so one of the generals is going to tell Hannibal, well, how are you going to do that there, General? He says, man, go get them elephants and watch. So what did he do? He went through the Swiss Alps and smashed Augustus Caesar.
It was four of them.
Straight smash.
It was four Africans of Rome.
Okay.
See, the Anchorman just knows the strategy, man, just a little bit.
Okay, now let me ask you this here, Brother Che, in your research. Okay, now, is that there during the time of Hannibal? I mean, was they brought there as slaves in Rome, or were they one of the conquerors of Rome to shut it down?
They were born in Africa.
Okay. All right, so they was so it was part of a campaign.
I got my little book here on Rome, an Empire Story by Greg Wolf. And I got the names of the four African empires, emperors. They were Septimius Severus, Claudius Albinus, Marcus Macrinus, and Aemilianus. Those are the four Roman emperors that were born in Africa, but most of them were Italian, and only one was a person who had been a North African national prior to becoming a Roman emperor.
Okay, hold on. Let me pull up Lerone Bennett right here.
About Lucius Septimius Severus. His mother was Roman, and his father was Berber.
Which is black.
Berber.
Okay, the Berbers, man. The Berbers was out of Mauritania, man.
Yeah,
That's Northwest Africa where the Berbers came from.
Yeah. Yeah, the Berbers is Hannibal's people. They're Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, at that time, that region was a Roman colony.
Yeah, but all I was getting at, Sarge, was that the reason the Romans probably had the good hygiene is because of African influence. Because we know during the Dark Ages, they were so sick that the Moors had to go up in there and teach them how to bathe themselves.
Yep, and proper plumbing, and sanitary, all that. Yep.
Well,
you should be proud of that, Sarge, because that means that our people are the kings and queens of civilization and refinement, and nobody can outdo us etiquette wise, in refinement. We're the greatest civilization.
What I'm saying is that. Rome's history, the Western Roman Empire spanned 1,000 years. It started about 500 B.C., and the Western Roman Empire finally fell to the barbarian invasion of Huns and the Franks in about the 4th, 5th century A.D., about roughly thereabout. So Rome was not, at that time, it wasn't conquered by the Moors when it was established, and it was a thriving civilization around the time of Jesus Christ. It was well established as a civilization. And in fact,
Moors,
Julius Caesar only died in 49 A.D.
Okay.
So I'm just saying that Rome was a well-established civilization, and they had long been bathing and had their hot water aqueducts and everything else. They had a sewer system.
I'm sure it was because of the African influence, because the first sewer system
That's precisely my point I'm making, Romero.
The Egyptians were the first ones to create a sewer system.
As
a matter of fact, they used to use pigs. They used to put pigs in their sewage system to clean out the sewage. Just to let you know that.
Well, I mean, look, the Romans were by any measure were an advanced civilization, considering they were around 2,500 years ago.
They stole everything.
By any measure.
They went and came in and stole everything. Sarge. They stole everything.
They stole everything. So the Roman arch, the keystone, the Punic column, all of those things they stole from Africans. So why aren't they in sub-Saharan Africa?
Why aren't there
archaeological evidence of them being there before the Romans built?
Sarge, why aren't there no pyramids in Europe? There's pyramids all over the world. But there's none in
Europe. The Romans weren't known for pyramids. The Romans were never known for pyramids. They were known for Roman architecture, which is still prevalent in our buildings today. And there's no evidence of Roman architecture predating Rome or Greece.
You got to remember.
Yes.
You got to remember that the Kemetic people and the African people were master architects, and they taught the world how to build. Go ahead, General. Sorry about that, Brother Jesse.
Oh, man, I got to pull it back up.
Go ahead, Brother Jesse.
Goddamn Sarge, if you know that the Egyptians, meaning the Kemites, had the first plumbing system going all the way back to 400 B.C.
And the first
to mention the fact that the comedians also, man, had devices of where they could talk. Through the water of the Nile, communicating, you know, from the lower cataracts of Egypt all the way down
there. They were the first ones to use electricity, General.
First ones to use electricity. Right. First ones to do brain surgery. First ones to do a whole lot of technological
embalming. Yeah, embalming the dead.
Emotep.
Architecture. And then, of course,
Let him back on, Jesse.
Hold on.
Sarge still with us.
Yeah, he's still with us. Hold on.
Okay, yeah, let him back on. Okay.
Okay. Now, Roman architecture is known for mainly three things that everyone agrees the Romans pretty much established. Because, again, there's no record of these. Even in Greece, because much of their architectural style they got from Greece, not all of it, much of it. But three things they are known for developing newly. Even the Greeks have it. They're known for the arch, the dome, and the vault. This is the Romanesque style that is established in Rome, and nowhere else is it found before the Roman Empire was. Nowhere else in the world. Those three methods of architecture are exclusively Roman.
Sarge, that's not what I asked you, though. I asked you, why are there no pyramids in Europe? There's pyramids all over the world, but there's none in Europe. There's none in Greece. There's none in Rome. There's none anywhere in Europe. What is your answer
Because I don't think that they adopted that particular architecture. Their needs didn't develop, need a pyramid, because they developed the wheel, or they used the wheel. They didn't develop it. They used it. The Egyptians only used it for the chariots and stuff like that, and maybe some pulleys.
Sarge.
They knew how
the
to do it.
And they didn't start using the chariots until later in the Roman, in the Egyptian dynasties. I mean, people make a lot of big deal out of the fact they built pyramids with levers and with ramps.
Sorry, answer my question. Why are there no pyramids in Europe?
I don't think that particular style of architecture appealed to them.
What's our time like, y'all?
I mean, if you look at Roman architecture, even after their knowledge of it, because remember, the Romans conquered Egypt, they still didn't build pyramids.
Right. No, but that's just it, though, Sarge. Okay, the Romans didn't build pyramids at all. Okay, and then you have to keep in mind,
they weren't that advanced.
Okay, wait, hold on, Sarge. And then to quote Professor George G.M. James of Stolen Legacy, they all came to Kemet, man, and stole knowledge and claimed it as their own. You see, is what they did. Okay. They didn't. In other words, man, you know, Europe was desolate, man. They didn't have nothing.
You got to remember now, anytime human beings interact and trade with each other, whether it's by trade or whether it's by conquest, there's no such thing as stealing. People take ideas they like and they adapt them to their own circumstances. That's been the case throughout human history. It's not a matter of stealing. It's seeing what can be useful to you and adopting it. Like the United States developed the transistor, the United States developed the integrated circuit, the United States developed the microprocessor. Everybody in the world is using it. They didn't steal it.
Okay, Sarge. How much knowledge did U.S. technology steal from black people, man? Okay. Look at a film called Hidden Figures, man. Look at a film called Hidden Figures.
Okay. You know what? I got a book. That y'all might want to get. I got the book called Black People Invented Everything by Dr. Suhan Kumar Das, the founder of the Solutionary Institute. And in this book, because I got it because I want to see how much his claims would hold up. And he says black people invented everything. Black people made America. Black people invented transportation. They invented style. They invented surgery. They invented music. They invented cuisine. They invented housing. They invented animals, domestic animals. They invented medicine. They invented farming. They invented education. They invented art. They invented manufacturing. They invented mining. They invented metalworking. They invented government and business, language, sports, weapons, and the science of creation. In short, black people invented everything, and I do not believe it, even though I read the book.
Well, what's so hard for you to believe?
What's so hard for you to believe, Sarge?
That's what I don't know.
Right.
Ain't you proud of that?
Yeah.
Ain't you proud of that,
Wait
Sarge?
A minute.
What I'm saying is
I don't believe it. I don't think his claims can stand up under scrutiny.
Why you say that, Sarge?
Because the claims he makes and he makes as documented fact are often spurious, they're half-hearted, they're based on insufficient evidence. That's for sure. I mean, the evidence of it is definitely scant at best and often circumstantial. But he posits as no doubt whatsoever about it whatsoever is utterly unquestionable. And that starts to make me suspicious right there whenever I hear anybody, whoever writes any kind of book, make claims like that.
Okay, can I ask you a question? You know that a lot of our history was given by word of mouth, you know, rather than written for years and centuries.
I'm glad you brought that point up there, man. Okay, you know, the opening track that we have on a lot of our episodes is Amapando by Miriam McKee. And I recall pulling up the news files up on her from the 1960s, and she had stated is that a lot of our traditions and knowledges were transferred down from generation to generation, orally, like the griot. Okay, because the griot spent his whole life, man, you know, getting the history, getting the knowledge together, and like about once every 3 or 4 years, he'll come down and recite. So therefore, when the griot will show up, the word will go around, hey, man, the griot is coming down. He's getting ready to drop knowledge.
Word.
So bring your tape recorders, your notepads, because he's going to be talking for about 3 or 4 days straight. Okay?
Scholar.
Straight. All right? Yeah, sun up to sun down. And he was not going to repeat himself. And once he is done, he is done. See, Anchorman, you got a good point on that right there. That is a fact, you see. Rebuttal.
That's why they didn't want us to read or write and know our history. They don't want us to know our history because they understand the capacity of the black man's mind. You see what I'm saying? And they know that we're supreme beings.
And then on top of that, once he starts reading, he starts realizing his position. And once he starts realizing his position, then he starts resisting. Then he becomes warlike. That's why they didn't want us to read. You see, that's why they wanted to keep us there. You know, as Brother Aleem Sharif had pointed out about Oscar Mashour, about the early films of movie making of Hollywood. That's why they used to have that Amos and Andy garbage, just the boss and all that bullshit. You see what I'm saying? Because they did not want us having knowledge of ourselves. And this is not hatred. This is not bigotry. These here is just some facts. You see, because the most hated man on planet Earth is the black man. You see, he is the most hated thing on this planet. And the cold party wouldn't make it so cold that they engineered it, got us hating ourselves. The X-Man taught you that. You know what I'm saying?
We're the image of God.
Even to this day.
We're the image of the devil. We're the image of God and the image of the devil.
You see? And why do you think, man, you know, they got Jonathan Majors up here on Ebony Magazine, all effeminized, man. After I saw that picture, man, I don't want to see Creed 3. I lost all interest in the Creed Fox movie.
What do you mean they have effeminized?
Like that.
What do you mean they have effeminized?
Man, okay, there's the cover star. You familiar with Ebony Magazine? Okay. They got him on the March 2023 edition of Ebony Magazine, Sarge. You from Chicago. You passed Johnson Publications right there on South Michigan Avenue. Okay. And it's got him up there wearing, you know, some pink attire, sitting on top of some type of couch. You know what I mean? And Brother Che, you know what I'm talking about because you were the one that told me about the picture.
Yeah.
On the cover. Yeah. And I lost all respect for Mr. Mason.
Sitting like a woman.
But keep in mind.
Poked out. His cross. He got some effeminized attire on. He looked like a straight up B.I.T. on that cover.
Exactly. You see? Yeah, it's real bad. And then look at the movie actress Charlize Theron, you know, from South Africa or Azania. And then she adopted two male children and stated, quote, unquote, I'm going to raise him as a girl.
That's the devil. The devil's
him.
Body. The beast.
Hold. That's foul. Hold it. Raise him as a girl.
Okay, I see the cover now. Man, it does look a little...
It's sickening. And that's an insult to every black man on this planet right there. Because they don't want to look at us as men. See, as long as we're out here killing each other, you see, we're okay. But as soon as we get together, you know, like what the X-Man was saying, like what HP was saying, hey, man, you know what? If you want to put somebody in their place, you just simply bring these bitches together. They don't want that. Just like what HP had said on the Solid Jasper Raphael show shortly before he was murdered in West Oakland. Anytime that you take away the slave image of the black male, you're going to scare white America. But as long as you're up there, Emerson, Andy, Bill Bailey, Rod Chesney, Yasser Boston, all that dumb shit, man, then you're okay. You're all right. But as soon as you say, hey, man, you know what, man, let's organize ourselves against these race folks. Hey, let's go out here and protect ourselves and protect our communities and protect our women and what have. Then what happens is we come under the scrutiny of as Brother Jay called it, you know, an old homosexual man himself by the name of Jay Gahoo. You know what I'm saying? Any black unity is a threat to national security.
Okay. Now, they so much cared about this that they were saying, what will we do to repair this wrongdoing? You know, this is why you got the reparations discussion. This is why, you know, we advocate for our self-determination and producing for ourselves. And this ain't hatred, Sarge. This is not hatred. You can only kick a dog so many times, man. You can't. And that's why Newton had said it himself, you know, and I got the quote from him. A panther's a defensive fight, but when it's cornered, okay, it would annihilate its enemy absolutely, completely, and unconditionally. That's a defensive fight, not an offensive fight. That's the only thing the European did, man. He offended people. He's going down there, man, to somebody else's land, taking their shit, playing with people. And why is it that the first thing that the European wants to do is rape the women?
Well, rape is a common aspect of... Rape is common during conquest and warfare. There's nothing new there by anybody.
Okay, sorry. Rape is an act wrong within itself.
Damn.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's the one big fear of everybody losing a war. When you lose a war, the men get slaughtered, the women get raped and taken as concubines, and the children are absorbed into the new conqueror's empire. That is a common throughout
Oh, okay. Sorry.
That'll make it right.
Okay.
I didn't say it made it right,
but hold on.
So Europeans are the only ones who do it.
Okay, but hold on, though, Sarge. You see, these are acts wrong within themselves. Okay, now, in African warfare, off of my studies of it, and I definitely want to get, you know, some of Dr. Wilson's students, you know, to come on this podcast as well, too, is because, see, in African warfare, the losing nation was incorporated into the winning nation. You didn't go rape their woman. You didn't go sodomize their sons, man. You didn't go violate, you know, 13, 14-year-old girls, man. You know what I'm saying? No. They were just incorporated
in there.
You
might want to check with Cujo Lewis when Nora Zerl Hurston interviewed him for the book she wrote, Barracoon, in which he was a man who had been kidnapped in the 19th century, and how his village was slaughtered by the slavers who were all black.
Let me ask you a question.
I got respect for you, Sarge. That is bullshit,
Sarge,
that you read, Sarge.
Sarge, why are you still been on
read,
defending
Sarge.
People so much? Why you defend them so much?
Now you're saying that the book Zorro Neural Hurston wrote is bullshit. You don't believe it. She interviewed this man. He was still living. He was still living in the 1920s when she interviewed him. She recorded him.
Sorry.
She recorded his tale of what happened to him when he was kidnapped from Africa.
That's after European invasion.
Now, even so, if you want to accuse somebody of bullshit, accuse her. Don't accuse me, because she wrote the book Barracoon.
Okay, Sarge. Okay. The point is, who had kidnapped him? It was the Europeans, was it not?
Hold on. Don't even give him time to respond to Brockton. We're down to our last 12 minutes. So we need to start making our calls.
Okay. All right. So we'll respond to that there on another episode, Brother Chad. But yeah, but go off into the closing comments.
All right. Who do we want to have go first, Brockton?
I'll go ahead first. You know, I just want to thank everybody here, you know, for tuning in to Shabbat Experience in Hand, you know, with the Anchor Man, you know, with Brother Chad, you know, our co-producer, Anchor Man, you know, our contributor here, and the Shabbat Experience in Hand is a division of Frontline Black News. And also, too, you know, I'm your co-executive producer and co-host of Shabbat Said Park. And we appreciate everybody that listens in to us. And then what they can do is that, you know, you could inbox us. You can go to our like page, Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, you know, inbox us, you know, at Frontline Black News, you know, let us know if you want to come on here with some great knowledge and what have you. Okay, that is my closing comment. Okay.
All right, go ahead, Sarge. What's your closing?
All right, well, it's always provocative. It's always good to talk about these things. I think the one thing we can all agree about history, whether no matter what point of view you take about it, is that it is infinite, it is varied. There are innumerable stories that are often contradictory, sometimes complementary, but nonetheless, the research never ends. History is never really settled because there's always something new to learn.
All right. Okay, Sarge, thank you. You know, and it's always a pleasure having you. And then, Sarge, although we generally disagree, but at least we do try to disagree agreeably, you know. And then also, too, folks, you know, go to Blog Talk Radio, pull up some of our past episodes, you know, because as I stated before, we're in our seventh season right now, and this here was episode 332 of season 7. All right. Okay, and that's it. Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Anchorman. What's your closing?
Okay, peace. My name is Ramel Sin, Angel of Peace from East Understanding Understood in the neighborhood near you. Living the hope without the dough, official frontline campaign. Salute to the fallen soldiers and salute to the active soldiers. Power to the people all the time, every time, all the time. I'm on military time. I'm utilizing my military mind because I'm on my military grind. I want to give a shout out to a lost 5% nation of God on Earth. I want to give a shout out to anybody who comes on this panel and breaks bread with us. Shout out to Shabaka for blessing me with the ability to be on the show. Shout out to my main man, if you can understand it. If you don't like him, who gives a damn? He got the master plan. That's Jesse Parrish, for mayor, all the time, every time, vice president, all that good stuff. Shout out to all Black Panthers around the world. Peace.
Yes, sir. Always. All right, folks. Okay. And that is a wrap, and we're going to go out here with a classic by the one and only Mr. Hugh Master Chaos.
That comes from Mozambique, Angola, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Botswana, Namibia, Lesotho, Swaziland, and the whole hinterland of South Africa. This train carries on in the young men and old men who are conscripted to come and work on contract in the gold mines of Johannesburg and its surrounding metropolis. Deep, deep, deep down in the belly of the earth, when they're digging and drilling for that mighty evasive stone, or when they dish that mishmash mush food into their iron plate with an iron shovel, or when they hear that choo-choo train and screaming apart in the far horizon, they always curse the coal train that brought them.